Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Back at it again. It's another episode. You know how we do it. It's the NFL Draft Bible Football Friday Spectacular Part 2, and we've multiplied for this show. That's right. We've brought on more hosts, more guests, more mock draft scenarios for another edition NFL Draft Bible Spectacular Part Deuce for the next 180 minutes. That's right. 3 hours of jam-packed NFL talk information with your host, Rick Saratella, for the NFL Draft Bible. We're going to go around the room and welcome in our host. We got Daniel Mogul-Yone, we got Ross Mandel, and we got the Reverend Ralph Mancini. We've got all kinds of draft nicks in the same room together, bringing you the information you need to know, and boy, do we have a lineup for you. When we talk special guests, we got special guests. When we talk beat writers, we got beat writers. We're going to cover all the picks, 17 through 32 this week after covering 1 through 16 last week. And before we get into all the good draft talk, gentlemen, I want to open it up to the roundtable discussion. And earlier today, one day after acquiring Brandon Marshall, the Miami Dolphins have shipped Ted Ginn Jr. to the San Francisco 49ers for what people are calling a fifth-round pick. Reaction, Reverend?
I think it's a good move. I mean, the San Francisco 49ers desperately needed a kick returner, and they got one in Ted Ginn Jr. Look, the guy is not a go-to guy as a receiver. He never was, and the Miami Dolphins made a mistake a few years ago taking him number 9 overall. But if you bring him in just as a kick returner, maybe as a third or fourth receiver, I think the guy provides that returnability, that speed as a third or fourth receiver to make some occasional plays. So I think overall this is a good move, a move that needed to be made by the San Francisco 49ers.
And a much-needed weapon, Ross, I think, for the 49ers, you know, a slot wideout to stretch the field, kind of complement Michael Crabtree in that offense, and we don't know who's going to be throwing them the ball. That's a conversation we'll have later in the show, but what do you make of this situation here?
Yeah, as Rev said, it gives him a kick return. It gets Josh Morgan out of that role since he's going to be a starting wideout. But to me, you know, Miami desperately needs a downfield speed threat, and they had Ted Ginn Jr. on the roster, and they got rid of him for a fifth-round pick. To me, that speaks volumes. You know, Ginn's got to learn how to hold on to the ball no matter where he's playing. And I could just see Coach Singletary now wringing his hands on the sidelines. So we'll see how it works out. It's not a bad deal. They didn't give up much.
I bet you Rex Ryan's smiling, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's the only time we saw Ted Ginn look like a football player last year was against the Jets. I think he actually caught one of those deep passes in Miami and then had a couple of kick returns
against
in New York.
Revis, nonetheless.
Correct, right. Yeah. He beat Darrell Revis and actually held on to the football and caught it, which is something we haven't seen too often in his days in South Florida.
Well, let's talk about the AFC East, gentlemen, because, you know, last week's news, Donovan McNabb kind of shook up the NFC East. Now, this week, we have the AFC East, Brandon Marshall coming to town. You know, the Jets are restocked and reloaded, and the Patriots are the Patriots. So, you know, how does the division stack up, Ralph, and who do you see right now as the division favorites?
Well, I think that the New York Jets are a division favorite right now. I mean, you take a look at the moves that they made in the offseason. They already had a strong defense, which is going to be made even stronger by the acquisition, by the trade acquisition of Antonio Cromartie. You put Revis on one side, Cromartie on the other, and, I mean, they're just going to lock down whoever they go up against. It's going to fortify that New York Jets pass rush. So I think the Jets are the number one team right now. And, you know, for that second spot, I see a dogfight there between the Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. And unfortunately, Bills fans, Buffalo, I'm sorry. I mean, I don't see them doing much of anything. They're going to have to rebuild. It's going to take them a while to turn into a playoff team once again. But right now, it's New York Jets. They're the best team in the division right now.
So according to the Reverend here, the Patriots will be battling the Dolphins for second place, Ross, not first place battling the Jets. Do you agree or disagree?
Right now I agree, but Patriots have an awful lot of early draft picks, and you know, they'll put them to good use. And Miami's upgraded their team. The Jets look solid. If I'm Buffalo, I mean, I'm feeling like the Baltimore Orioles of baseball in a division with the Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox. what do you do if you're a Bills fan? They got nothing going on. They're looking at a 3-win season, and I don't see it getting any better for them. I mean, it's just terrible time to be a Bills fan.
Yeah, they got some old faces and new places with Buddy Nixon and Chan Gailey running the show here, Dan. What's the outlook for these Buffalo Bills? What's your take as far as how they look in the division? Do they have any shot to compete with these three teams?
Well, it's hard to be optimistic about them. I mean, you got teams are adding stuff left and right, and, you know, hopefully we'll get to ask our next guest a couple of questions about what he feels like, you know, seeing all the teams in his division adding wide receivers while his team's kind of standing pat. You know, the bottom line is they gotta do well in this draft. They got to start plugging in some young talent. They need a quarterback to build around, and they need to get pieces that fit in that 3-4 scheme. I mean, they don't, you know, hopefully Maben, this might be the thing that kind of turns it on for him, because he was definitely undersized as a 4-3 defensive end. He's not really built physically to battle along the line of scrimmage, so hopefully this move will pan out for him. But otherwise, you know, they don't have many pieces to fill that defense.
Yeah, and you know, we really haven't even gotten around to talking about the impact of Brandon Marshall, guys. You know, you guys seem to think that the Jets and Patriots will be the two teams that are going at it. But what about Brandon Marshall, and does he bring legitimacy to the Miami Dolphins, Ross, as far as competing for this division?
I think he absolutely does. I think he's a top five receiver, and you just don't see those traded around very often. I think he'll settle down. He's been joking about not being a prima donna. I think, to me, that's a good sign. I think he knows that he needed a fresh start, and it, you know, this trade wakes him up. I think, you know, under the tutelage of the staff they have there, I think he's going to be fine. And I think the Jets and the Patriots and, of course, the Bills got to be a little nervous, a little bounce of power shift with Brandon Marshall coming with that Chad Henne throwing the ball. I like it.
All right. Well, the AFC East has been one for the movers and shakers during the offseason, and we're going to welcome in our first guest of the evening to discuss the AFC East, and that's Jarius Byrd from the Buffalo Bills, the second-round draft pick from a year ago who led the NFL in interceptions last season. Very impressive for a rookie. Outstanding first season. Welcome to the show, Jarius.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's get right into it. So before we get into Bill's questions, I want to ask you a little bit about this time a year ago and the whole NFL draft process. What was running through your head at this point, and what was it leading up to the draft?
You know, it was just a lot of uncertainty, you know, around this time. Your nerves and everything plays into that kind of thing. You don't really know where you're going to make home. You know, this is a big step in a lot of people's lives, so... just a lot of uncertainty and, you know, just praying.
Hey, Jarius, this is Dan over here. I wanted to ask you, you know, we were talking about the additions in this division, including Marshall going to Miami, the Jets bringing in Santonio Holmes as a safety. What goes through your mind when you see teams in your division acquiring this kind of receiver talent?
I mean, really, it's just a competition. You know, they got a lot of acquisitions in our conference, so it's just, you know, the level of play, just up your level of play. I mean, as a player, everyone in the NFL likes to compete. I mean, if you don't, then you're in the wrong business. So I welcome it, and I'm excited about it.
Hey, Jazz, let me ask you about your first season in the league. You had to have some mixed emotions there. You made the Pro Bowl. You tied for the league lead in interceptions, but you ended up getting hurt. When you look back at your first season, what do you think?
I think it was, I mean, obviously it was a very productive season, but, you know, like I said, I was hurt, so it kind of like couldn't really enjoy it as much as you really wanted to just because of being hurt. So I'm just looking forward to this year and just seeing what God has in store for me.
Hey, Jarius, this is Ralph Mancini here. Talk to us about the 3-3-4 scheme. Tell us about, you know, some of the new things that we've seen, the adjustment to the new scheme. I believe George Edwards is the new defensive coordinator there. How are things coming along in that respect?
Things are good, you know. Obviously, you know, the 3-4 is different to everybody, so it's just a lot of learning going on right now, you know. You know, not trying to be too detailed, but, I mean, it's just a lot of learning, and, you know, everybody's out there, you know, doing our conditioning and stuff like that and periods, and we're just, you know, installing different things and just a learning process, and, you know, Coach Edwards is doing a great job of just teaching right now.
Talking to Jarius Byrd here on the NFL Draft 5-0 Hotline, Buffalo Bills cornerback,
led the NFL in interceptions his first year in the league with 9. And, Jarius, I want to ask you, coming into year 2, it seems like everything is in Buffalo is new. You have a new general manager in Buddy Nix. You have a new head coach in Chan Gailey. What are your first impact and impressions after getting a chance to meet with Chan and getting a feel for the new vibe of where the what direction the team is headed?
I'm good. So far, so good. You know, it's, you know, got some change in there, and I think it'll be, you know, wake everybody up. You know, everyone's, you know, gotta re-earn and do their job, you know. So having a new coaching staff and everything in there brings a freshness to everything. So I think that that's good.
Hey, Jarius, I wanted to ask you about, you know, playing mostly corner as a college guy and then playing more safety in the NFL. You know, a lot of times when we project players to another position, it's difficult. Talk about that transition for you and what allowed you to be so successful.
It's just a gift, you know. I mean, I don't really know. You know, the transition was, it was kind of difficult, you know, as far as like in the run game, different things like that, because your angles are different. But my coaches did a great job. Like a lot of the veterans and Coach George Katavlis, he did a great job just helping me to just make the transition and move inside the safety and do the things that it took to, you know, be productive, you know, at the next level, at this level.
Now, did you embrace that right away, or was there any hesitation?
Oh, no hesitation. I mean, it's just any way I can help the team. That's the way I want to, you know, go about, you know, my job. So, like I said, he did a great job of, you know, teaching, you know, and explaining how to play the position, and a lot of the veterans kind of took me under their wing and helped me.
Hey, Jarius, Ralph here again. Talk to us about your first impressions of the wide receivers that you were playing against and tight ends and such in the NFL. You know, tell us, what are some of the differences that you saw between the college players and the pro players that you were going up against? And what do you try to tell a lot of these young kids who are coming out this year? You know, guys like, you know, T.J. Ward out of Oregon and stuff like that. What do you tell these new kids what to prepare for?
You know, you just got to be a student of the game. I mean, pretty much at this level, once you get to this level, everybody's good. You know what I'm saying? So it's not going to surprise you. It's just basically details. You know, right now it's just details. Who's more detailed, you know, with what they do?
Jarius, let me ask you a question. I know your dad, Gil, played for the Chargers back in the day. Do you guys get into a little bit of a competition, or does he give you advice and you say, no, Pops, I got this? What's that relationship like?
Oh, it's real good. You know, my father, you know, he helps me out, you know, I'm saying, when I need things. And, you know, he's just a source of knowledge that I can go to. But, you know, we always compete. And, you know, he always brings back, you know, back when I was playing, like, you know, just, you know, good nature, fun, you know, about his career, you know. So it's a lot of fun having that, being able to have that.
Hey, with the draft, you know, only 6 days away, can you fill us in a little bit about a couple of your former defensive teammates in the defensive backfield, Walter Thurman III and T.J. Ward? Give the fans out there a little scouting report on those guys.
Oh, great players. You know, Walter Thurman, he's coming out. He's a great cover corner. He's gonna be really good. It's unfortunate what happened to him with his injury, but you know, he's a great, great cover corner. Has all the skills you need to be, you know, tight fly corner. And then you have T.J. Ward. You know, he's a hard hitting safety. You know, he'll knock you out, and you know, he just has a very well rounded game. So whoever lands those two guys are gonna be, you know, in good shape.
Jarius Bird here on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline, and Jarius, I see here that you have created a new Twitter initiative using social media to promote random acts of kindness, and you are asking fans to share stories of good deeds. Talk a little bit about this project.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a project called Louder Than Words, and, you know, what we're doing is pretty much, like you said, just trying to encourage people and fans to, you know, record and just tell about their random acts of good deeds, you know, because a lot of times you hear people talk about doing good things, but, you know, it never gets put into action. And you know, I'm all about, you know, your actions speak louder than your words. They should. So I think that that's something that we're getting started, and I just encourage, you know, all the fans out there to just, you know, do it one random act of kindness. You know, it can't hurt. You know what I'm saying? It can take no time out of your day. So.
And you can follow up and tweet your random acts of kindness on twitter.com/RULTW, louder than words. That's Jarius Bird from the Buffalo Bills, safety, league leader in interceptions. Jarius, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Jarius Bird, and once again, he has the new Twitter initiative, louder than words. You can tweet your random acts of kindness on Twitter at twitter.com/RULTW.
All right, guys, we're going to keep it moving right along, and we got a few minutes here before we jump in to our next guest. Just thoughts and impressions, finally, from the Buffalo Bills, new regime. Where do you think they go here, Ralph, with that first pick?
The first pick, well, actually, if you talk to the educated Bills fan, he's going to tell you, take the best tackle out there. They desperately need a left tackle. But, you know, the thing is, if the top two tackles are off the board, I'm talking about Russell Okung and I'm talking about Brian Bulaga, you know, I would actually look at maybe even a quarterback or even a running back in this draft. And I'll tell you something. I know a lot of guys are not going to agree with me, but if C.J. Spiller is there at that spot, I would seriously consider taking him. I mean, this team needs some type of juice. I mean, it's not just about selling tickets. It's about, you know, giving the fans some hope out there, because right now you take, you know, we talked about the deficiencies on defense. Well, on offense, they don't have much either. I mean, they're missing receivers. They don't have a quality tight end, and they don't have a quarterback. They need help along the offensive line. So you bring a guy like C.J. Spiller in there, at least he'll give you an element of excitement. He can bust a big play every now and then. So I would seriously consider that.
C.J. Spiller, one possible candidate with Marshawn Lynch on the trading block. But you did say something there. One thing, Rev, I'm going to disagree with you. It is about selling tickets in Buffalo. And Ross, I'm going to toss it to you, because Jim Kelly has Tim Tebow all about signed, sealed, and delivered to those Buffalo Bills. Is there legitimate interest here at number 9 at a quarterback? Or are they going to play their cards and maybe lay in the weeds and pluck a Tim Tebow in round 2?
Well, I think if Clawson were there for them, they would jump on him, but I don't think he's going to be there. So, yeah, I think they're going to wait to round 2, and I wouldn't be at all shocked if Tebow's still there for them to jump on him. Why not? I don't think he's going to last that long, but they definitely need a quarterback upgrade.
Dan, Buffalo has a lot of needs. The Reverend mentioned C.J. Spiller, the running back. You know, he's a guy that some people have him going very high. Some people have him sliding to the middle of the first round. Do you even think C.J. Spiller will make it to pick number 9? Where do you have a C.J. Spiller going?
Well, I got C.J. going at number 6 to Seattle, so I as I believe you do as well. Is that right? I think we agree on that one. And I just think C.J. is too good. He's too much of a playmaker to last to number 9. I know there's not a lot of teams picking in the top 8 that have a big need at running back, but I think he's more than a running back. He's a playmaker that can catch the ball, run the ball, be a return guy. So yeah, he can run routes. So a team like Seattle is in dire need of some sort of life on that offense. You know, who is their playmaker right now? Silence. So they could use a guy like C.J. Spiller on that offense.
Okay, so let me ask you this, guys. If C.J. Spiller goes in the top 10, the chances are there's probably going to be one or two, at least, more running backs drafted in the first round. Who are some of those guys that you think could go in the first round?
Well, Ryan Matthews is definitely going to go in the first round. San Diego's the team that everybody's thinking is going to take him, and I think if he lasts that long, he's definitely going to San Diego.
Well, I wouldn't say definitely, but I'd say there's a good chance that he could go to San Diego. They're definitely a running back. They don't have anything at that position right now in terms of, you know, a guy that could take straight up the middle. Another guy similarly built to Mr. Matthews, who's also maybe even bigger than Matthews, is Jonathan Dwyer out of Georgia Tech. You know, this is a guy who is your prototypical big bruising back, a guy who could break some tackles, a very physical guy. So, you know, he's another option that maybe could possibly even go in that late first round.
Well, you said the magic words there, Reverend, because speaking of Jonathan Dwyer,
We have him on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline right now. We're going to welcome into the show Jonathan Dwyer, the big bruising running back from Georgia Tech, looking to make a name for himself on Thursday in the upcoming 2010 NFL Draft, just 6 days away, people. And Jonathan, welcome to the show. What goes through your head when you hear those words, 6 days away?
You know, it's kind of like a, you know, unrealistic type of deal. You know, it's something that, you know, a lot of kids, a lot of guys have been just dreaming to go through, and this actually is happening. It's, you know, sort of unreal and sort of just, you know, something that it has to really sink in, like maybe a day later, day before the draft, when the finally sinks in that it's actually here.
Hey Jonathan, you played at Georgia Tech. One of your former teammates, DeShort Choice, is now playing for the Dallas Cowboys. Have you spoken to your ex-teammate, DeShort Choice, lately? And how did he help you when you were a freshman? And what kind of advice is he giving you about the NFL?
It's just coming in. You know, you go into college, you work hard to get to college, and you work hard to get to, you know, to get drafted. You know, once you get to the NFL, it's about working, going beyond those little three things you did back then. And it's like going above your expectations and, you know, having a swagger and attitude about yourself that you're coming in to compete and work, earn a job and earn a spot on the team, and to, you know, to have a goal for yourself of becoming the best and have, you know, inspirations and dreams about yourself to do those things once you get to that next level.
Hey, Jonathan, let me ask you a question. You left a year early. Was that a tough decision for you, and who helped you make it? Was it all you, your family, coaches? Who helped? Take us through that decision-making process.
It was a tough decision, I guess, you know, especially the fact that we lost in the bowl game. So it was really about, like, you know, if I come back, you know, we may be able to have a good team and, you know, might be able to make a run for the national championship. But, you know, it was basically a decision between me and my family.
Hey, Jonathan, how's it going? It's Dan. The other day,
hey,
we talked about – pretty good, man. How's everything?
Hey, just sitting here watching some baseball, man.
I hear that. I'm sure the Mets are losing somewhere, wherever they're playing tonight. I don't know where that is. But, Jonathan, you know, a lot of people talk about you going from that option attack to an NFL attack. But you said, in fact, the more difficult transition was you going from the Chan Gailey offense to the triple option offense. And you think it's going to be an easier jump going to the NFL. Explain that to the listeners a little bit.
I would say it's going to be easier jump. It's just going to be the fact that changing back to what you originally have done all my career playing ball. And I've always been a tailback. I've always been 7 yards deep all my life. The only thing I've ever had to do 5 yards deep was, you know, Coach Johnson's offense for 2 years. So, I mean, it's going to be a big, you know, hoorah transition from going from that. It's just, you know, the only transition that's going to matter is just the game speed of the NFL and just getting adapted to, you know, the way they play and the way their style, each and every team style play. And that's something, that's just being a ball player and adjusting to anything on the fly.
We got Jonathan Dwyer on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline with us. Jonathan, Rick Saratella here. I want to ask you a question about your draft path. And, you know, you had an interesting journey. I don't know how much you followed it. I'm sure you must have been aware somewhat, but before the season started, I think most people had you projected as the number one running back for this upcoming draft class. Then you kind of somewhat took a little bit of a slide on your draft stock, and now as we get closer to the draft, your stock is now rising again. Tell us, you know, take us through that. Do you feel that you are the best running back in the NFL draft? And if you are, tell us why.
I think, you know, each and every running back has their own special abilities and what they bring to every team. But, you know, in my aspect of what I bring is, you know, I think that, you know, I come in, you know, I'm a, you know, every down back, I'm a complete, every type of back, any back that everybody in the league is looking for. You know, if you're looking for a guy who can do it all, you know, run inside, run outside, run routes, you know, catch the ball, pass block, run block, and return kicks as well, I mean, I'm that guy. You know, I could do any type of job you want me to do. If it's, you know, you need me to make a big play, you know, just give me an opportunity, I'm going to make the play. You know, or to be my, and you know, I'm just going to come out and be productive week in, week out. You know, there's no going to be slubs or anything like that. You know, I'm going to try to do the best I can to lead my team to get a Super Bowl ring.
Hey, Jonathan, you already mentioned that you're a big physical back. What do you think is the most underrated part of your game?
I guess it was, I would say my speed, just the fact that, you know, no one really, you know, everybody doubts me because of my 40 time and this and that, but, I mean, no one knows I came from a broken toe and all that. So, I mean, from my great big toe, so that's pretty much a big, you know, downfall of how I sprint. But, you know, my film speaks for itself. You know, I've never been caught from behind ever in my life. And, you know, I didn't get caught from behind by any DBs in the ACC, so I should be able to explain a lot more than all the scouts and, you know, haters out there who don't believe I can run fast.
Jonathan, I want to get you on the record here. I've heard you called Diesel. I've heard you called D-Train. You're going to NFL now. We need to fix one official nickname for you. Which one do you like the best, and what are you going with?
I don't know. I don't really have a preference, you know. People at Georgia Tech call me Diesel, the fans and everything. But, you know, everybody on the team, you know, just calls me JD or they call me D-Train. But other than that, I mean, pretty much my main nickname is just JD. That's what I've been called ever since I was a kid.
All right, we're going with that then.
All right, JD, then. Tell us a little bit about, you know, going up against a couple of guys in practice, Derek Morgan and Morgan Burnett, two other guys along with Demaryius Thomas, the four you guys all declared early. What was it like going up against those guys in practice?
When Derek Morgan and all the guys are doing their job on the front line, he told Coach just to throw that ball up to Demaryius and let him go get it. So, I mean, you know, it was good, to go against those guys. You know, those guys made me the player that I am today. You know, going against Burnett, you know, he made you, you know, be more of a, you know, different type of back. You know, he can bang you up, well, can bang if you want to bang, you know, and tackle in the open field. So you got to keep him modest a little bit, you know, throw some moves at him and then, you know, hit him every now and then. And then Derek Morgan makes you, you know, compete week in, week out at practice. You know, he made me a better pass blocker.
We got Jonathan Dwyer on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline joining us now from the University of Georgia Tech, coming out of that triple option offense.
Hey, Jonathan, talk to us about your pass catching. You only have 15 receptions in college. Do the coaches ask you a lot or you know, want to find out about you more as a pass catching running back?
I mean, a lot of coaches ask me if I can catch the ball, and, you know, if you came to the pro day and everything like that, you know, I didn't drop any balls, and every workout I've been to so far, I haven't dropped the ball yet, so knock on wood that I keep doing it. But, you know, I mean, there's no reason for them to throw me the ball in college because, I mean, you know, we had Demaryius and, you know, we had all the big time players to throw the ball to, so there's no need for me for them to throw me the ball week in, week out. And then, you know, in Coach Johnson's words, you know, why would we throw the ball when we're going up and down the field running the ball on everybody? So there's no need to do all that.
Jonathan, in addition to your pass catching, are they asking you questions about your pass blocking technique? Anyone concerned about that?
I mean, they ask questions, but, I mean, it's just because of the scheme. You know, there wasn't that much need of me of pass blocking because, you know, it was more of a quick-based scheme of just, you know, going the ball up and, you know, going quick slants and play action and things like that. But, you know, I can pass block, I can block, run block, I like blocking, I like, you know, hitting and things like that. So that's just the fact of me being, I like to be physical. Other than that, you know, it's they know what I'm about, every team knows, and so it's just, you know, matter of them just giving me a chance and let me show what my ability is about.
All right, JD, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, you got a trip coming up on Sunday, is that right? You going to New England?
I'll have a trip, just a little workout.
Oh, just a workout. All right. I was going to ask you if you were nervous about meeting Mr. Belichick. But give the fans there a little insight of what these workouts are like and who's usually there with the workouts.
It's just you and the scout, man. That's about it. And it's just, you know, just order right your positioning coach for that team. You just do a couple of drills. You know, he might throw the ball to you a little bit to see how your hands are. And just, you know, go through some, you know, see how your footwork and how good your feet are and just – They just want to get a visual look of what you're about instead of just, you know, hearing this and that about you. So they just want to get a visual look of each and every player.
Hey, JD, Jonathan Dwyer, one more before we let you go. Who are some of the other teams that you worked out with aside from the Patriots?
Atlanta Falcons, Minnesota, Cleveland Browns, and that's it. Everybody else has just been visits.
All right, very interesting stuff. That's Jonathan Dwyer, Georgia Tech University. Definitely a name to remember for Sundays. Jonathan, I want to thank you for joining us, and hopefully you'll check back in with us and give us an update here after the draft.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Good luck. That's Jonathan Dwyer, Georgia Tech, 6 days away from the 2010 NFL Draft. Can you smell it, ladies and gentlemen?
JD
in the place to be. Don't get it twisted. And we're going to go over to the NFL Draft Bible Hotline over to 702. 702, you're on the line. What's your name? Where are you from? What's on your mind?
Not a lot, apparently.
702 going once, going twice, three times. Well, our caller got real quiet as soon as we put them on the air. So we're clicking you off. And if you don't know, this is the NFL Draft Bible Football Friday Spectacular Part 2 coming at you live in full effect from the NFL Draft Bible headquarters here in Union Square, New York City. 6 days away, we will be reporting live from Radio City with 10-plus hours of pre- and post-draft coverage. You don't want to go anywhere else for everything you need to know on the NFL Draft. And in case you didn't know, you can actually get your copy of the 2010 NFL Draft Bible right now. It's not too late. You can get the PDF version instantly. Sign up now at NFLDraftBible.com. I'll make sure you get that PDF download, 321 pages. Go to Twitter, check it out, Google it, see what people are saying. I guarantee you, once you go to this NFL Draft Guide, you will never, ever again purchase another single draft book ever in your life. Why? Because you don't want stale product. You don't want product that's been sitting there on the shelf since February, before the combine even happened. Think about everything that's transpired. Combine, free agency, pro days. We bring it to you live. We bring it to you, everything you need to know, NFL Draft Bible on location. We're going to do pick-by-pick live coverage, Twitter feed, for all 255 picks, baby. If you're with me, get started. Get the engine started. Rev it up, because we're going racing 10-plus hours of NFL Draft coverage pre and post, and we're going to bring it to you right here on the NFL Draft Bible. And I think we have our next guest on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline, and it's none other than former NFL quarterback Ken Dorsey, and he now joins us on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. Welcome to the show, Ken.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to get right into it, Ken. And, you know, while we have you on here, I want to ask you a question about the whole NFL draft process and take us back to your situation and how it was for you and what was going through your head. We're 6 days away from the 2010 version, but talk a little bit about how the experience was for you.
It was stressful. You know, I was fortunate, I guess, or unfortunate enough to come out with a very deep quarterback class. And there was, I think, 5 first-rounders the year I came out. And, you know, it was, the whole process was intense, going to the combine, having the pro day, having individual workouts. And, you know, just when you got the thing figured out, something happens and, you know, everything kind of goes in a different direction. So it's so unpredictable, and that was kind of the part that makes it the most stressful, is you just have absolutely no clue what's going to happen.
Hey, Ken, Ralph here. There are reports out there you tried out for the USL. Do you have any aspirations of eventually returning to the NFL?
You know, I think it would have to be in the right situation. You know, it was a tenuous couple of years there in Cleveland. You know, if I had ended in San Francisco, I think there would have been no doubt that I would, you know, definitely, you know, be trying and trying and giving everything, you know, every opportunity for the NFL. But, you know, I think Cleveland, it was a tough few years there. And, you know, I'm just kind of enjoying the time with my family. And, you know, I, to be honest, I'd be more willing to explore opportunities in other leagues like the CFL or something like that if that were to arise.
Also, Ken, I'm sure, well, do you have a chance to watch your Miami Hurricanes at all?
Of course.
And if you do, And if you do, what's your take on Ja'Cory Harris, their current quarterback, and his future prospects?
You know, I like Ja'Cory. I think, you know, he's a great football player. You know, I watching him kind of develop last year into a you know, explosive guy who can really stretch the ball down the field, you know, and really take advantage of the talent he's got around him. It's exciting to see. And he was only a sophomore last year. So, you know, I think if he does a great job this year, continues to develop, takes advantage of the off-season program to get bigger and stronger, and I think he'll do that. I think he'll have a great opportunity, have a great year next year, and who knows what will happen after that. Obviously, he's being coached by, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best, offensive coordinators in the NFL, in college football, and Coach Whipple, who has NFL experience coaching guys like Donovan McNabb and Ben Roethlisberger. So right there, he automatically has the credibility to walk into the league and have great experience behind him.
Ken, let me ask you a question back to the 2001 National Championship team, a team that had 16 first-round draft picks come out eventually. You guys crushed Nebraska. You're up 34-0 at halftime. But I want to take you back to a game earlier in the season. You're playing Virginia Tech. You're up on them. They come back on you, and they had a two-point conversion to essentially ruin your season. What's going through your mind when they're lining up for that two-point conversion?
You know, it's up there, you just never know. I mean, you know, they can be no wins. We could be no win. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's going to be a dogfight anytime you walk up into that stadium. You know, and in that situation, you know, the only thing you're thinking about, in my mind at least, was, you know, what can I do, you know, coming up in this next drive to get us a win, preparing the team for a two-minute situation, preparing the team for overtime, and that sort of thing. You got to prepare yourself mentally, you know, hoping and wishing that at the same time that two-point conversion fails. But, you know, obviously that's something out of your control. But, you know, it was an amazing game, back and forth. And I think, you know, playing games like that are you know, was one of the biggest reasons why we were so successful in the national championship game.
Hey, Ken, I got a couple more Miami questions for you. Do you get asked more about the year you guys won or about the year when, you know, you had that rough call go against you against Ohio State?
Well, playing up in Cleveland for 3 years, somehow – you know, I got talked to about a lot that Ohio State game. I don't know why, but up in Cleveland, they like to bring that game up a lot. You know, I mean, shoot, the first time out, I get traded there. The very first day of training camp, I'm running out to the field, ready to go, all excited, and I get booed. So it's you know, they sure like bringing up that game, but you know, overall, I think that's the game that people remember a lot, just because of how memorable it was, from, you know, either the call that put into the second overtime, or just it being a double overtime game, and just how amazing that game was, period.
And we also wanted to know if you caught that ESPN 30 for 30 inside the U.
Yes, I did. It was very interesting. You know, to be honest, I enjoyed watching it, especially the early years with Howard Schnellenberger, because I really didn't know a lot about the program then. And it was very interesting to see him and the type of man he was, and kind of the guy who really laid the foundation for the teams of the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And it was very, very interesting to see. The only problem I had with it was the way it left the ending and the negative light it turned on Butch Davis there. And, you know, obviously I'm a huge supporter of Butch. I loved playing for him. He was the biggest reason why I went to Miami. And so, you know, my understanding is they're going to do another one, and hopefully it, you know, the true story of Butch Davis and Larry Coker and now Randy Shannon can be told of what great men they are and really bringing the program back to prominence.
Talking to Ken Dorsey here from the U, Miami University quarterback legend on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. Ken, just following up on that ESPN documentary, 30 and 30, can you share with us a story maybe that didn't make the movie?
Well, you know, I think just to kind of tell you how tight-knit of a group that is, you know, at Miami, my sophomore year, the first road start I ever had was up in Washington. And, you know, that was the first game that I lost as a starter. And then we went on that great run. But that next week when I came back, you know, I was fortunate enough. Bernie Kosar, Steve Walsh, Gino Toretta all either called me or came to the facility and spent time and shared their stories. And, you know, Bernie shared a story with me about going up to Florida, playing up there, the struggles he went through up there. And then bouncing back and finishing the season strong, and to have that kind of tradition and the guys of that caliber and that type of experience, not only in college but in the pros, to kind of share stories with you that are very similar to your own experience and see how they got through it and had successful years and big runs and that sort of thing. Really kind of takes a weight off your shoulders and helps me, you know, go through that rest of the year strong.
And we're speaking with Ken Dorsey, legendary quarterback from the University of Miami, joined on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline with Rick Saratella, Ralph Mancini, Ross Mandel, and Daniel Mauvillon. Ken, I want to ask you, you know, Miami takes a little bit of criticism for not involving some of their alumni more to the campus and interact with some of the current members of the football team. What is your current relationship with the program, and do you get invited down? Do you get to interact with the students?
You know, I've got a good relationship with the school. I mean, I was fortunate enough this year to go on, you know, some trips with the team. Or a trip to the team, you know, to Wake Forest to be a speaker at before the game to a lot of the boosters and whatnot. And, you know, I love going back to the school and being a part of that, you know, and hope to someday have a big role at the university, be it in athletics or in the inside the university somewhere else. I really have a very good relationship with not only Kirby, the athletic director, but President Shalala and the rest of the, you know, student body, student, you know, athletes and everybody else there.
Hey, Ken, we understand that you're doing some coaching now, some high school coaching for the Lakewood Ranch Mustangs, I believe.
I was helping out there. You know, wasn't a full time thing. You know, with me, yeah, I was still working out, still having to do football stuff and things like that. So I would try to help out as much as I can. But I absolutely loved going over there to help those guys out. I did you know, as much as I could to. You know, to be there as often as I could, and I just had an absolute blast doing it.
Well, you know, what are some of the core principles you try to teach these kids in what it takes to be a quarterback, and also do you have any aspirations, any personal aspirations to become a college coach down the road?
Well, you know, in my opinion, you know, a foundation of fundamentals is one of the most important things to teach a high school kid so that they've got a good core to go, you know, go on and hopefully, you know, if they're able to play on the next level, kind of, continue to improve their ability. I just feel like I was fortunate enough to have an exceptional high school football coach who really, you know, taught me the basics and fundamentals of the position, you know, the mental toughness to play that position, and, you know, and really instilled that in me. And I just feel like that that was something that I tried to instill in those guys this past year. And the experience that I had this past year really showed me that coaching is probably something that I'm going to be very interested in doing in the future, yes.
Well, Ken, thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it. We got a ton of questions we didn't even get to from the chat room, some questions that some people wanted to ask you. Maybe we can have you on again sometime in the near future and continue this conversation, but it's been a pleasure to have you on and look forward to potentially doing it again sometime soon.
Hey, for sure. Anytime, guys. Anytime. I appreciate you having me.
I appreciate it. And that's Ken Dorsey from the U, that would be Miami University, legendary quarterback and maybe one to watch for as a future college coach. Keep a lookout for Ken Dorsey. Spent a few minutes with us here on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. And, guys, it's time for Mock Draft Scenarios Part 2. We did 1 through 16 last week. We're going to do 17 through 32 this week, and we're going to jump right into it here because we just can't stop, won't stop here on the NFL Draft Bible Football Friday Spectacular Part 2. And to talk some San Francisco 49ers, who do have the 17th overall pick, is none other than Andrew Garda from the Thundering Blurb. And, Andrew, we left 13 out for you last week because we knew you were coming on to talk about the 49ers and what they're going to do with their two picks at number 13 and 17.
Hey, Andrew, it's Dan. I wanted to ask you, you know, if you thought the 49ers were going to look for a quarterback and could they even decide to get one in the first round? What if Jimmy Clausen is still there when they pick at 13 or even 17? Will he be tempting to them?
I think, first of all, hey, guys, thanks for having me on. I always love talking some football with you. I think that they definitely go and will take a hard look at a guy like Clausen if he's there. But this week they came out and they were once again very, very definitive that Alex Smith is their franchise quarterback. Now, you could take that two ways. One, you can't believe anything anybody says at all right now. At all, from any team, any scout, any analyst, there's so much misinformation you don't know. But they have been very, very clear on that point since the end of last season that they believe in Alex Smith. That said, last year, who falls into their lap but Michael Crabtree? At the time, the thought was they could use a wide receiver, but they didn't need a wide receiver. They had bigger needs, some offensive line needs, some guys along the defensive line, maybe linebacker. They went and they grabbed Crabtree. So they may go off the reservation, but I got to tell you, I think if he's there at 13, there's a good chance that they're going to get a lot of trade offers from some teams, I think, who will be looking to try and jump up and grab Clausen before he slips too much further. So I actually think if Clausen's there, there's probably a better chance that they trade out of that spot, trade back a little bit, and try and get some value for the pick than to grab him. Not to say that, you know, he's not a guy who wouldn't fit over there, but I just have a feeling that they are going to I think they're going to try and move rather than jump on Clausen. I really do think they like what they have there at the quarterback position right now, and I think if they were really serious about upgrading, we would have heard a lot more about McNabb, and they weren't really involved in that. We would have heard a lot more about other possibilities for them, even a guy like Jason Campbell, but they haven't made any of these moves, and it says to me that really they are very, not satisfied, but content where they sit, and they are going to probably head to other needs.
Well, let's talk about some of those other needs, Andrew. This is Ralph here. Number one, you know, you spoke about Crabtree last year, and before they even thought Crabtree was going to fall to them, I know they had their sights set on Michael Oher, and ironically this year, right tackle seems to be in need again for a second year in a row. As we know, Adam Snyder is there right now, not exactly a great option. And also they have a need over at cornerback as well. You know, Nate Clements is an overpaid guy, getting paid $6 million per year. The team's a little disappointed in him. Do you think that the 49ers will go in the direction of an offensive tackle or cornerback in with those two picks that they have in the first round?
I think that's exactly
what
they'll
do
if they can manage it. What we're looking at right now is a really deep offensive line class and a pretty good corner class, pretty good secondary group. But when it comes down to it, there is a drop from the top five or so offensive linemen back. And I think with two picks in that first round, they're really poised to kind of go either way and pick the best value that's going to fill their position. There was an interesting article at the Press Democrat that Matt Miyoko wrote about, you know, being able to not just take the best player available, but at the same time fill a need. And I think at 13 specifically, but even back at 17, the Niners sit in a position where they can very easily just take the best player available, just take the best thing, and still fill a need. So they're not locked into any particular, you know, must-have order, really. If there's a couple offensive linemen, let's say, and it's entirely possible that, like, the top five offensive linemen could fly off the board, it's possible. I happen to think that there's going to at least be one guy sitting there at 13. They could, if they felt a little bit more strongly about one of the corners, they could go that way. And with the three teams behind them, the Seahawks, the Titans, the Giants, although the Seahawks could lean towards an offensive lineman, I think there's a good chance that they could let that offensive lineman fall and grab a corner with that 13 spot. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they go. If there is a if Trent Williams happens to fall to them, I think they might be very happy. Beluga is another guy that might drop to them. So it'll be interesting to see how it is. If they wait a little bit, if they want to take that corner with that first pick, 17, there's a really good chance that Charles Brown from USC is going to be there. And while he's not a perfect specimen, could use a little more weight and improve some of his technique, because he is a converted tight end, so he's still sort of learning as he goes. I think they could, you know, be very happy with taking one of the top cornerbacks and then get Charles Brown, who a lot of people feel are kind of on the fringe of that top category of offensive linemen, and probably walk away very happy. I will say that I think they should leave that first round, if at all possible, with at least one offensive lineman and somebody for the secondary. Could be a cornerback. If there's a safety they really like, I could see them going that direction. But those are two of the biggest key needs. And now that they've got Ted Ginn Jr., who is finally in the role that he was born to play, special teams player only, you know, they're set up to not have to run after value, you know, and try and fit someone into their offense in a way that maybe if they were going after a guy like C.J. Spiller, who was a hot pick a while ago, you know, they don't necessarily desperately need him. There are a lot of good running backs, but that special teams kick return ability was a big deal for them. But now they have Ted Ginn, who, if he does one thing well, it is return kicks. They don't have to worry about that now. So they really can go after what I think the key needs are, which is that offensive line and that secondary. And I do agree. I think they're going to go with those guys in those first two picks, again, unless they get a really juicy trade offer, in which case I could see them fall back a little bit, and then that may change their plans a little.
All right, that's Andrew Garda from the Thundering Blurb. And, Andrew, I'm sorry to do it to you. We got to keep it moving. We didn't even get to ask you your impact and analysis from the Ted Ginn Jr., but he was Andrew Garda, and he runs the Thundering Blurb. Go check that out, the Thundering Blurb, also a co-host or a host here on the Fantasy Sports Channel. And we're going to get right into our next pick. And to do that, we have Kevin Hatfield of the NFL Draft Bible, who I was honored to be a guest on his show earlier in the week. That should be airing later this week. But, Kevin, I want to get right into it. And what are the Pittsburgh Steelers going to do here at number 18? You are on the clock, my friend.
Hey, Kevin, all right, let me ask you. They got rid of Santonio Holmes.
Uh-huh.
So now wide receiver is another need they have. They need cornerback. They need defensive end. Is there any shot there's going to be a receiver worthwhile there at number 18? Or are we looking at a sort of an upgrade on the interior of the offensive line? Where do you think they're going to go here? Give us some names.
Well, first off, Rick, thank you so much for having me on. It's a great honor. To answer the question, I really don't see the Steelers going after a receiver in the first round. They still have Hines Ward. They're very high on Mike Wallace. They brought in Randall L. for the squad. and they have Arnes Battle to take the fourth spot. And even if Linus Sweet can get his act together, he could even fill in some needed depth. So I really do not see the Steelers going wide receiver in the first round, maybe not even the second round. I see them maybe taking a chance in the third or fourth round, maybe if Taylor Price falls, kid out of kid out of Marshall, very, very fast receiver. He has good hands. He's going to be a good deep threat to kind of play the Mike Wallace role from last year. He's potentially a type of player we could use. Jordan Shipley's another player that comes to mind, a player out of Texas. He's, again, more of a slot receiver, something I think we need, some speed in the middle of the field. He could also affect us on special teams. Great. So, but regarding the first round, I see the Steelers going either offensive line or secondary. This has been a long time coming, in my opinion, to address that need. We've gone by with middle of the road corners for way too long. William Gay, Deshae Townsend's getting up there. Ike Taylor is not the player that everyone thinks he is. He's a solid number two corner, but not a shutdown number one. So ideally, here's my ideal situation. You got to play out many different situations on draft day because you don't know what's going to happen. But I like to see the Steelers trade up. I think trading up to get Joe Hayden, cornerback out of Florida, who in my opinion is by far the best legitimate shutdown corner in the draft, I think picking him would be the best option for the Steelers. It may be tough to do. They might have to give up a little more than they'd like to, but if they want to cure their disease in the secondary, because if anyone was watching the Steelers last year, they were just an absolute mess on secondary after Paul Amalu went down, because frankly, the corners just can't cover well in man. And Hayden would come in there, I think, be the legitimate number one corner for the Steelers day one. It would probably cost us a third-round pick, maybe even a second-round pick, to trade up and get that. But I would be completely willing to do it just because of his high level of talent.
And there you have it, Kevin Hatfield, breaking it down for the Pittsburgh Steelers at number 18, going with a cornerback as their biggest need at number 18 for the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to take them off the clock and put the Atlanta Falcons on the clock with Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, one of the most well-respected NFL writers in the nation. We're going to welcome him onto the show for Mock Draft Scenario number 19.
Hey, Orlando, this is Ralph speaking. The Atlanta Falcons, one of their biggest needs is at defensive end. You know, after a remarkable 2008 season in which he registered 16.5 sacks, John Abraham was a non-factor in many games last year, only put up 5.5 sacks. What did the Falcons do to get him some help on the left side? We all know that Jamal Anderson is not the answer there.
Well, they drafted defensive ends in the last two drafts, so those guys would be first in order to get the opportunity. There's been a lot of national mention of Brandon Graham, the defensive end out of Michigan, but most of those people don't have the benefit of being able to talk to Coach Smith and Thomas Dimitroff on a regular basis. And when you talk to them, or when I've talked to them after their end-of-season evaluations and at the combine and the draft meetings that they've had for the media, they've repeatedly said that defensive end wasn't a problem in their eyes. Their problem, they felt, was up the middle with the loss of Parade Jerry at defensive tackle. And they think if they get Parade Jerry and Jonathan Babinaw going, then, you know, the ends that they have on the roster can bring it home. The analogy was made to Stroud and Henderson down in Jacksonville, the defense that Coach Smith coordinated. And those defensive ends down there, I think it was Spicer and Spires, you know, those guys were getting double-digit sacks because of that middle push was there. So, we just line up and do the regular old blind mock draft. You come up with Brandon Graham. But when you think about their analysis of their own situation, they've got a weak side linebacker that's going to turn 34 in June. You kind of got to look at what they might do at the linebacker position, maybe even trading out a couple spots back to pick up a second-round pick and maybe go with a kid like Weatherspoon out of Missouri. He's a possibility. Defensive tackles, 11 defensive defensive linemen came out early in this draft, so and they think this draft is really sick in defensive tackles. So, I mean, if you can't rule out the Oldrick kid from Penn State. You can't rule out the Brian Price kid from UCLA. They don't seem to be showing up around the 19th pick area, but a scenario where they trade out and, amass some picks and get a defensive tackle is also in play here.
Interesting. Orlando, let me ask you this. I know they added Dante Robinson, but do you think corner is still a need that they might address? And also, are they going to find a legit number two to pair up with Roddy White, or are they going to wait for the later rounds to do something like that?
They think they don't have to do anything there. And, again, that was, questions we had for them. If you remember, right before the start of the season, they signed the kid up. Brian Williams from Jacksonville, who's familiar with the defense and started about four games before his knee gave out. And if he's coming along well and his rehabilitation is on time and on schedule, as they say it is, he would be the candidate to win that other starting position. And then the two kids that got a lot of action last year, Brett Grimes and Christopher Owens, would be competing for that nickelback spot with Chavis Jackson, who played there last year. Again, they've taken five defensive backs in the last two drafts, so they may not feel that they have to go back there again unless talent outweighs the need. He talks a great deal about this being a needs-based drafting team. Unless they're loaded and they're at a championship level, then they could take the best player available. But they know that they're not a championship level team. He knows what that looks like coming from New England. So, they got to go need-based draft, and quarterback's not a real need for them very high in the draft. I mean, certainly they can go somebody, one of them compensatory picks they got late in the draft and take somebody there. But as far as top corners in the country, we stopped scouting them right after Robinson was signed.
All right, there you have it. That's Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And now it's time to welcome in John McClain, a good friend of the NFL Draft Bible from the Houston Chronicle. Welcome to the show, John.
My pleasure, guys. How are you?
Hey, John, it's Dan. I want to ask you, is this the year? I know it's not their traditional MO on draft weekend, but is this the year the Texans use a high pick on a running back, maybe in the first or second round?
I believe it's going to be in the first round. If it's not C.J. Spiller, it's going to be Ryan Matthews. Spiller, we all know, is a great home run hitter. And it's funny because Matthews averaged 6.6 yards a carry last season. Spiller averaged 5.6, and yet everybody talks about what a great breakaway threat Spiller is because he's capable of scoring every time he touches the ball. And it seems like Matthews must be two, and Matthews is more ideally suited to what they play here, that one-cut zone system. I think they'll take a running back in the first round, cornerback in the second round, like Dominic Franks from Oklahoma, or I don't think Kareem Jackson will last that long, but I do think they're going running back and cornerback.
Hey, John, Ralph Mancini here. What about the cornerback position? Dante Robinson was Houston's closest thing to a shutdown cornerback. He's now with the Atlanta Falcons right now. If the season were to start, your two starters would be Glover Quinn and Brian McCain. While Quinn is a fantastic physical defensive back, I don't know if McCain may be ready for a starter's role. He definitely has his issues in his tackling technique. Do you think that maybe the Houston Texans might be looking at either a Kyle Wilson, Devin McCourty, or maybe even an Earl Thomas with that first-round pick? Earl Thomas, as we know, he's a safety, but he's a guy who can play cornerback as well.
No, they're looking for a running back in the first round and a cornerback in the second. The only way they would take a corner in the first round is if Spiller and Matthews were both gone. That's not out of the question either in case the Giants want Matthews. And if the Texans had both back's gone. They would take McCourty over Wilson because he's more physical. As it is, they think they can get a good corner in the second round. Last year, they got Glover Quinn in the fourth round. He started the last 13 games, was very physical. They love the guy. If Brian Cushing hadn't been Defensive Player of the Year, people would have seen what a good job Quinn did it as well. And I think right now that Chuck Reeves, who's 100% recovered from suffering a broken leg last year, would start opposite Glover Quinn, and Bryce McCain would be the nickelback. And they've got Fred Bennett, who started 8 games as a rookie but has been a disappointment since, and Antoine Bolden, a former third-round pick who spent too much of his first 2 years on injured reserve. So they do have some talent that has started, but they know they still need another one, and that's why I think they'll take a corner in the second round. It wouldn't surprise me. They'll take a free safety at some point, probably the fourth or fifth round, and it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't take another corner low.
That's John McClain from the Houston Chronicle covering the Houston Texans. Make sure, if you want the real inside information for the Houston Texans, check out John at the Houston Chronicle, a big favorite of the NFL Draft Bible and somebody largely responsible for making the NFL Draft such a popular event. John goes back 33 years now covering the NFL Draft, and he's one of the large reasons why the event has grown to become so popular because of people like yourself, John, who has put this event to the forefront. So I want to thank you for that.
My pleasure, because publications like the Draft Bible, people can't get enough. That's why you guys do it all year round, and that's one of the things that makes it so interesting. And sometimes I think the draft is more popular about midway through the season when you know your team's out of the running. The draft is more popular than the second half.
Absolutely, and John, we'll have to do this again sometime.
My pleasure, guys, anytime. Have a good weekend.
I appreciate it. You too. That's John McClain. One of my favorite NFL writers, probably my favorite NFL writers, guys. I mean, if you're not reading John McClain at the Houston Chronicle, then you are snoozing. And before we get into our next team, we're going to go over to the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. We got 214 on the hotline. What's your name? Where you're from? What's on your mind? Going once, going twice, two times, three times, 214. Goodbye.
You're up.
All right, guys, next up. You're tuned in to the Football Friday Spectacular Part 2. Rick Saratella, Ralph Mancini, Ross Mandel, Daniel Moglione with me here on the April. Woo! What are we? April 16th, just 6 days away, fellas. We're going to keep it moving and go into our next team, which is the Cincinnati Bengals at number 21. Some talk today, Ross, that the Bengals could be in the market for Tony Scheffler. And I know a lot of people had the Bengals targeting possibly Jermaine Gresham in the first round at tight end. Now, if they are able to acquire Scheffler, that opens up some options for them there in the first round.
It definitely does, and they wouldn't have to give up a whole lot to get him. And, I mean, really, the flotsam that they have on their roster right now at tight end isn't impressing anybody. And that this team needs a tight end. Carson Palmer needs a tight end. If one can be had, who's NFL ready and has proven he can catch the ball, you can get him for a fifth or a fourth round pick, and then that frees up your first round pick. I think they'd be wise to do such a thing.
Ralph, the Bengals usually lean on their tight end to be more involved in the blocking game. Do you think they could really use a tight end at that number 21 overall pick?
Well, it depends on who falls to them. If a guy like Jermaine Gresham is there, I think you definitely have to go after a guy like that who I think could be a special tight end. You know, look, they already have guys who can block. They have J.P. Foshee there. You're hearing that Reggie Kelly might be making a comeback. But if a premier guy, a special player, a guy who could become the next Antonio Gates falls to them, like a Jermaine Gresham, you know, I think you should go after that type of player.
I don't disagree with that. But, you know, I mean, they got Crocker Williams back at safety. Nice, but they're getting old and they're kind of injury prone. They need help on the offensive line. And Cedric Benson's contract's up after this year, so there are other needs.
Well, look, at the safety position, I agree with you that they do definitely need an upgrade. You talk about Roy Williams. You know, he's only played in 7 games over the past 2 seasons, and when he does play, you wish he was injured.
Can't trust him.
but the thing is that who's going to be available to them at the safety position? You know, Earl Thomas is probably not going to be there. So who's the next best guy? You know, is Chad Jones a guy you want to take a chance on that high? Probably not. And Taylor Mays, quite frankly, I don't think he's a first-round pick. So, you know, if I were to pick between a Jermaine Gresham and that next best safety, I think I'd go after the tight end at that position.
I agree with you in that circumstance, and you're assuming they're not going to trade for Scheffler. But wouldn't they be, if they do get Scheffler and it would be the receiving tight end that they need, wouldn't they be well-served to add an offensive lineman if Earl Thomas isn't there?
Well, actually, I think I'd probably go for a defensive end. You know, Antoine Odom tore up his right Achilles last year. He got injured. And is Michael Johnson the answer? We don't know yet.
All right. Well, that was the Cincinnati Bengals at number 21. And next up on the clock is number 22. And to put the New England Patriots on the clock, we're going to welcome in Ian Rappaport of the Boston Herald. Welcome to the show, Ian.
How you guys doing?
Hey, good, Ian. Ralph Mancini here. The New England Patriots, as we all know, they have four picks out of the first 53. Number one, do you think that they trade up, and do they address the outside linebacker position at all?
Well, I do think there's a possibility to trade up. You know, the problem is that if they're going to trade up for an outside linebacker edge guy, there's not really anyone to trade up for. I think if they want Sergio Kindle, he'll be there at 22. I don't know if they trade up for Brandon Graham. He's a good player, and I think he'll, you know, really help someone maybe like the Falcons or the Titans, you know, earlier. But, you know, he's not a prototype guy. He's not long. He's not like a lot of the outside linebackers they like. So I think they may, you know, if they're going to trade up maybe for Dez Bryant, fill the need at receiver, maybe for Rolando McClain from Alabama to play alongside Jerod Mayo. I think they can wait. I think they can wait at 22 and pick up a really good edge guy. But if they're going to trade up, it's probably not going to be for one of those guys.
Ian, when they have their second round picks, what are they looking to do here? I know they had a Ricky Sappin for a workout. I know they need tight end. Are they looking at Aaron Hernandez? Are they looking at Doran Dickerson? What are they looking to do with those picks? Bolster tight end, perhaps?
Well, yeah. I think I would be extremely surprised if one of those picks is not a tight end. You know, I think probably Gresham will be gone by the time you get to the 40s. I mean, I'm sure he will, unless something crazy happens. Gronkowski from Arizona is a guy who, you know, is obviously a good athlete and a tough guy, you know, but he may fall that far because, you know, he was injured last year and has some question marks. Pitta from BYU, I think, is a guy they like. They see him sort of the Dallas Clark mold, give Brady that Dallas Clark that Peyton Manning's had. So I think they'll go tight end. I think they will. I think they'll probably go receiver as well. You know, there's so many who, you know, who could be available, you know, at that spot. And if they haven't hit up, you know, gotten a defensive end, if they didn't pick Jared Odrick at 22, then maybe Alex Carrington, you know, to be that 3-4 Richard Seymour clone. I think they can really do a ton of things in the second round.
Talking to Ian Rappaport here of the Boston Herald on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. Ian, how do you see the New England backfield situation playing itself out? Who's going to be toting the rock here for the Patriots in 2010?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think right now Lawrence Maroney is the starter. You know, he was the first-round draft pick in 2006 and has been given every opportunity to do something. He struggled with fumblitis last year and really has not yet fulfilled his potential. But, you know, he'll be given a chance again. And, you know, Fred Taylor is back, and you know, he's a year older, one injury later. But, you know, I think he'll have a chance to contribute, and Kevin Falk will do his usual thing on third down. But I do think it's probable, that they draft a running back. You know, if it's not going to be Ryan Matthews at 22, you know, maybe Anthony Dixon in the fourth round, maybe Charles Scott from LSU way later. I think there's a Dexter McCluster, you know, maybe in late in the second, or if they trade into the third. So I think they have some options at running back too.
That's Ian Rappaport of the Boston Herald. We want to thank him for joining on the NFL Draft Bible Football Spectacular Part 2, and that was the New England Patriots at 22. And we're going to take the Patriots off the clock, and we're going to put the Green Bay Packers on the clock, who are picking number 23. And to discuss what they could potentially do there is none other than Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Hey, Tom, thanks for joining us. I wanted to ask you, if Green Bay does go defense in the first round, do you think it's more likely that they will address their needs in the secondary, or could they continue to look to add pieces into that 3-4 scheme in year number two?
Well, I think they have options there. You know, I think some of the highest potential 3-4 guys or the best ones are probably going to be gone. You know, Graham from Michigan, I think, will probably be gone. I don't think they're interested in Pierre Paul. I think he's too much of an end for them. I think they will. Jerry Hughes is probably the same in the same boat. I think he's a little bit too much of an end. I think corner or safety is more likely if they go defense. I think, you know, it certainly, you know, if Kyle Wilson was there, I don't see how they could pass him up because he adds, you know, the other dimension of returning, which they badly need. And then I could see them taking Taylor Mays, too. They need another safety, and while his coverage ability is a little bit suspect, I think they'd love to have a guy like him up in the box.
Hey, Tom, Ralph here. Let's take a look at the other side of the football. On the offense, number one, the Green Bay Packers do need a long-term solution on the left side. I'm talking about left tackle. Chad Clifton will be 34 years old, and he's wearing down. And then also, in addition, you're hearing rumblings that the Green Bay Packers might be interested in Brian Westbrook. In this draft, you see them going after maybe that change of pace back. So talk about running back and offensive tackle.
Okay, well, first with the running back situation, they are interested in Brian Westbrook. I think there's some things that still need to happen for that to come through, and, you know, a big part of that is the physical. You know, what kind of shape is Brian Westbrook in? How is his knee and ankle? I think the concussion thing is something you have to look at. I think if they pass that, I could see them signing him before the draft, and then that allows them the luxury of maybe instead of trying to find another back, maybe they can just draft someone who's a returner, you know, or maybe he's a running back and a returner, and they can justify keeping him on the roster as a returner. Tackle, they absolutely are going to have to take someone somewhere. You know, there's basically, the way I see it, there's eight tackles to consider, and then there's a big drop-off. And I think, you know, the big question is, will they be willing to take one of these guys who's a project, like Brown from USC? That's going to take a lot of work to make that guy into a player. He's got the skills, but he's got to learn how to play the pro game and mature a lot. So if I had to, you know, make a choice right now, I think they would probably go with Mays more so, but I could see him taking the tackle. They will take a tackle somewhere, first, second round, I'm not sure.
Well, Tom, let me follow that up. And Tom Silverstein here, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. You know, some people are speculating that Anthony Davis may slide in the draft and could be available for the Packers. And, you know, he doesn't seem to fit that Packers mold. But, you know, if he does slide down to Green Bay at that 23 pick, I would think that is somebody they would have to consider there. What's your thought on that?
I think maybe. I really think that if, you know, there's probably a tackle there that Ted Thompson likes. I couldn't tell you for sure. He loves USC guys. But he also likes guys who love football. You know, he wants guys who are just hard-nosed football, hardcore football guys that got to love football, the Clay Matthews type of guys. Those are his kind of players. And I don't see Anthony Davis as that type of a player. He's got great natural talent, but he's soft and not motivated. And, you know, I don't see that happening. I do think Thompson will actively try to trade back, maybe even out of the first round, thinking that he could get a couple of good second-round players. If Davis is there, I mean, he's got to think about it, but my gut feeling is that, no, he doesn't want someone who's not absolutely committed to the game.
So when it's all said and done, Tom, who does it look like here? Maybe Taylor Mays?
That would be my first inclination. I still think Charles Brown is a possibility. I think, you know, maybe Thompson, after talking to him, has a feeling like they can motivate this guy and make him into a real player. You know, there's probably some other guys that, you know, come to mind. You know, Dukas is a possibility, although I think that's a little early for him. Tackle from UMass. I think, you know, beyond that, there could be, if someone slipped, if Brandon Graham slipped or something like that, that's a possibility as well. But right now, I would say Thompson tries to trade back. If he can't, Mays is the pick.
All right, Tom Silverstein for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel breaking down the Green Bay Packers. I want to thank you for joining us, Tom.
You're very welcome.
All right, and Tom Silverstein getting a lot of shout-outs in the chat room here, people saying they love the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel coverage. I tend to agree with that. And wouldn't that be something if you had Brandon Graham on the opposite side of Clay Matthews?
Ouch.
Wow. All right, guys, let's take the
dance on the ground, anyone?
Let's take the Green Bay Packers off the clock and put the Philadelphia Eagles on the clock. And, guys, if what Tom is saying stands up to be accurate and the Packers are in the market for safety, you know, we saw the report today that the Eagles also have their eyes on a safety and could be looking to move up in the draft to get their guy. Where do we see – I kind of thought Taylor Mays would kind of go to Philadelphia here at 24, but – potentially Mays could be off the board. Potentially the Eagles could trade up. You know, Ross, let me ask you first. Is it a safety that the Eagles are seeking, or where do they go?
I think they need themselves a safety or a defensive end. And, you know, if they want Derek Morgan or Earl Thomas, or I think they're going to have to trade up to get them. I don't know if that's going to happen. The question to me is, do they go with that same position even if those guys are gone, or do they go corner? I mean, there are plenty of corners down there that are very capable NFL players right now. They need a center. Jamal Jackson's not going to be ready for the preseason. And I really doubt they want to go with Nick Cole again. They got a lot of needs. I don't think they have to sacrifice to trade up to get one of those players. I think they can stay where they are, get the corner or a flexible interior offensive lineman.
Or even, like you said, a defensive end or a linebacker. I think this is a team that could go in a lot of directions in the first round. And I don't see a fit for trading up. I mean, in the rumor they mentioned Eric Berry. I mean,
They would have to do
so much to move up to get somebody like him. I think that's a pipe dream. That's less realistic than the Browns trading up to get Sam.
Oh, maybe Earl Thomas.
Makes sense. But
maybe.
Anyone who could pick Eric Berry is going to pick Eric Berry. They're not going to trade.
But wait a second. If you need a safety that's going to be able to cover, I mean, you have Thomas, you have Berry, and then what else do you have after that? You don't have much.
Let me pose this to you guys. Maybe the talk with the Berry could involve the Eagles moving up to 7 with friend Tom Heckert over there in Cleveland. You know, we saw it with Mangini and the Jets last year.
Cleveland is in the habit of not getting value for
right.
their trading.
Well,
that works out well for Philly.
So I guess maybe that's the
match. What did they get from Mark Sanchez last year? Brett Ratliff?
Yeah, I mean, Philly's got some picks to trade.
Brett Ratliff and Chancey Stuckey? Or
no, they got Stuckey.
They got
Stuckey
back.
No, they got Abram Elam.
Right. Of course, that's what we forget. But, yeah, I mean, Philly has a volume of picks. But, again, I mean, I just don't see a team saying, you know what we'd like? some middle round picks instead of
let me put it this way. Look, this team, Philadelphia, always does a good job in the trenches. They always get guys that can rush the passer, and they do have a lot of guys that can rush the passer. In that trade that they made with Cleveland, they got back Alex Hall, who I think is a very underrated player. He's a big guy, 6'5", can rush the passer. Now, I think what they need to do is they need to get themselves a linebacker that can actually cover tight ends and running backs out of the backfield. You know, you take a look at their depth chart right now, Akeem Jordan is one of their starters right now, and he's very inconsistent in terms of run defense. So if a guy like Sean Weatherspoon is out there, why wouldn't you roll the dice on somebody like that who could be a three-down type of linebacker who can cover, who can fly all over the field? I think that would be a terrific pick.
You know, for a team that's perceived to be a competitive ball club, the Eagles have a lot of needs, and, you know, that the cornerbacks are aging too. I mean, their whole secondary's gone through an overhaul the last few years. I mean, this team, for someone, you know, that just traded Donovan McNabb, this team has a lot of needs, but we're going to take Philadelphia off the clock, and we're going to head down the I-95 to Baltimore with Eric Aronson of WNST 1570 AM Baltimore. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hey, how you doing? Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Eric. Ralph Mancini here. You know, when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens, I would think that out of necessity, their top priority would have to be cornerback. Fabian Washington, Ladarius Webb, they both suffered ACL tears. So I would think that the Baltimore Ravens would like to get a cornerback with some size. It could be a physical type of player. I'm looking at a couple of guys here. We all know that your GM over there likes those SEC guys. Maybe a guy like Kareem Jackson if he's there, maybe Kyle Wilson, maybe a Patrick Robinson. Do you see the Baltimore Ravens going after a cornerback with their first pick?
You know, cornerback is definitely a need, as you mentioned, Webb and Fabian Washington suffering injuries. But, you know, the one thing that remains true with Ozzie Newsome is he's going to take the best player available regardless of position. You know, other areas of need for the Ravens would be tight end, Ed Reed. He said at the end of the season that he was coming back was 50-50, but, you know, we're assuming that he's going to be back, but we don't know how long that's going to be, so looking for his replacement. And then also, you know, Ravens struggle putting pressure on the opposition's quarterback, so a defensive end blitzer. It really just comes down to whoever is at the top of Ozzie's board, but he's also said that there's a lot of guys that he likes in this draft, and he wouldn't mind moving back to add some of those picks that he gave up in the Anquan Boldin trade.
Hey, Eric, it's Dan. Thanks a lot for joining us here. If they don't go in the cornerback direction, I know they already added a wide receiver in Anquan Boldin to help the passing game. If Jermaine Gresham is there when they pick, is there any way they could pass him up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a way, because I look at this draft, and I do look at the Baltimore Ravens and assume that somewhere in their picks, if they're going to come away with a tight end. But this is such a deep tight end draft that maybe they don't have to do it with their first-round pick. Maybe if a guy like, you know, what was mentioned before, Kyle Wilson or Earl Thomas is still hanging there at 25, I think they would go in that direction, address the tight end a little bit deeper in the draft.
Eric, if they were presented with that scenario that you mentioned, Earl Thomas or – you know, take your choice, Kyle Wilson or Devin McCourty, which way do you think they would tend to lean, knowing that they could probably use a return man as well, and McCourty and Wilson seem to kill two birds with one stone?
Yeah, I would assume that probably Kyle Wilson is a little bit ahead of Earl Thomas on their draft board. But again, with the versatility that I think that Earl Thomas displays, whether he could be a corner, whether he'll be a safety, you know, he'll have if he does happen to be drafted by the Baltimore Ravens, a great mentor in Ed Reed to be able to, ease his transition to the NFL level. But I think it would be Wilson, Thomas, and then McCourty third. That's how I think that they would rank them.
All right, that's Eric Aronson of WNST 1570 AM Baltimore. I want to thank you for joining on, breaking down the Ravens draft news.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and we're going to keep it moving here on the NFL Draft Bible Football Spectacular 2, and we're going through mock draft scenarios. We're up to number 26, the Arizona Cardinals. But before we do, I want to let you know you can go to the NFL Draft Bible now. Right now, get your copy of the 321-page 9th Annual 2010 NFL Draft Bible. You can download the PDF on demand. You don't have to wait for the draft. You can get it now. And I know our next guest is flipping through a copy as we speak, and that would be none other than Matt Williamson of Scouts, Inc. over at ESPN. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, it's good to be here. How you doing?
Hey, Matt. Ross here. Let me ask you this for the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, Carlos Dansby gone. Bertrand Berry retires. O'Keefer doesn't seem to be part of the plan. And Joey Porter, I don't know what to make of. Am I understating it when I say that some serious help is needed at the linebacker spot for Arizona?
No, I'm very much with you. And in fact, I think they need help in a lot of spots. I mean, for as good a football team as they were, I don't think they're going to do anything at quarterback, but I think they need an inside linebacker to replace Dansby, not a thumper. I mean, a real playmaker that's going to be expensive. They need a big-time outside linebacking pass rusher. I think they need a true nose tackle. I don't like their nose tackle position at all, and it doesn't seem to get talked about enough. And I really have questions about their offensive line. I mean, I think Kurt Warner made that offensive line look a lot better in protection than they really were. And, you know, Levi Brown, they're talking about moving him to left tackle. That's fine, but he's not great. They need at least a big-time tackle prospect, and I don't know how they can fill all those needs these upcoming days.
Is tight end a luxury at this point?
I tend to think so just because of all the needs I just mentioned. It's a very deep tight end draft, so maybe in the third round or in that neighborhood, somebody falls to you. You have some extra picks with Bolden. Maybe you snag somebody, but it has to be down the priority list because the offense has been so potent without a tight end in there. You know, I understand Bolden's not going to be there, and obviously there's a different guy pulling the trigger, quarterback. But, you know, they're gonna run the ball more. It's an old-school Steeler mentality probably now, a little bit more so, and I don't know that they need a high-flying tight end. It would be nice, and if a guy falls to them, like we said, it's a deep tight end draft. There's a lot of good athletes at that position in this draft. Maybe you snag them. But, boy, they have a long laundry list of needs.
Hey, Matt, let's look down the road here in the mid-rounds, maybe in the third or fourth or fifth rounds. You know, do you think that the Arizona Cardinals will be focusing on a wide receiver at some point? I mean, let's face it, Anquan Boldin is now a Baltimore Raven, and, you know, you pretty much have Steve Breaston, who's a good player, more of a slot player, but not the most durable guy out there. And then you have Early Doucette, who looked great in the playoffs, but again, not the most durable guy out there. Do you think that at some point they'll be focusing on a guy with some speed who could be a deep threat, maybe a guy like a Jacoby Ford, maybe a guy like Marcus Stingley from UConn? Do you think that that's going to take place at some point in the draft?
Yeah, I do think so. And not only did they lose Bolden, who everybody understands, I mean, it was a substantial loss, but it's sort of expected. But they lost Jeremy Urban, too. He's not a great player, but he got on the field for them. I mean, if you lose two of your top five, you at least need to bring in one body there. And the guys you mentioned do make some sense. I think they have the luxury to, you know, bring somebody in as a number four, maybe help out on special teams if they bring in a bigger guy, run down on kickoffs and help you out that way, a gunner. Or maybe you bring in a return-type guy. So I have high hopes for Early Doucette, to be honest with you. And if Stevie Breston's your three, you know, 2/3 with Doucette, I think you're in pretty good shape. But I do think you need another body there that has some promise. You know, fourth-rounder, like you mentioned, does make some sense.
Talking to Matt Williamson here from ESPN Scouts, Inc., and those of you who follow Matt's columns and know that he is on the Sean Weatherspoon beat, Matt, and you know, I would think that has to be a possibility here at number 26 for Arizona. But let me ask you, do you think Weatherspoon will be on the board when their pick comes up?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you emailed me out of the blue saying, hey, you really think Weatherspoon's going to the Giants in the middle of the round? And I sort of do, and it's not because I love Weatherspoon. I just think he fits the new defensive scheme a lot better than a guy like McClain because he covers so much ground. I think there will be a couple teams really interested in him. I don't love him personally, but I see what other teams are excited about because he does everything pretty well. He's very athletic. He obviously tested extremely well. He's shown really well since the season ended. But I think this is a pretty likely landing spot too, though, because I think he could be that dynamic inside guy, the weak inside linebacker, instead of the thumper role because he is very versatile. And I think he'd fit a 3-4 fine. And that's one of the things that's nice about the kid is I think he could be a middle linebacker in a Tampa 2 system if he's protected pretty well. I think he's ideally a will linebacker in a 4-3, but I also think he could be that weak inside guy in a 3-4 and would fit here well as a potential Dansby replacement.
Matt, let me ask you one quick question here. Who starts the season for the Cardinals under center, and who finishes it?
Leinart. Oh, unless he gets hurt, because I don't trust the protection. He holds the football too long. He's not the biggest guy around. And I don't have a lot of great things to say about Matt Leinart, or their protection for that matter, but I really have nothing good to say about Derek Anderson.
I don't think anybody does.
No.
Hey, Matt, you know, that brings me to one last final point here. I mean, it's not out of the question that Jimmy Clausen does the Aaron Rodgers slip and slide here. If he is available at 26, are the Cardinals considering it?
Ooh, that's a tough call. And I'm kind of guessing that Clausen is going to start the fall. You know, the thing that worries me, though, if you're Arizona and you love him, or if you're Minnesota and you love him, and you start to think, wow, we didn't think this was going to be a chance, and he's getting close, I wonder if one of those teams will pull a Brown scenario like Brady Quinn did and trade above those teams to go grab him. And that would make some sense. If you're, you know, one of the worst teams in the league, picking early in the second round, maybe put a package together to go get him at the in the mid-20s, can Arizona afford to do that? I don't have the answer. If Clausen's sitting there with their pick in the first round, I don't think anybody would blame them. But they also have to look at themselves like, hey, we've won this division. We're 2 years removed from the Super Bowl. The NFC West isn't a powerhouse division. We can be right in the thick of things again. Can we afford to have a quarterback sit around and not get his jersey dirty for a year? I bet they kind of live for today and pass on him.
That's Matt Williamson from Scouts, Inc. over at ESPN, who does a fantastic job. Make sure you check him out if you're not already. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Appreciate that. That's Matt Williamson. Check out his work over at ESPN.com with Scouts, Inc. and the fellas over there. And we're going to move right into our next pick. We are going to put the Dallas Cowboys on the clock, America's team, and talk some Dallas Cowboys football. We're going to welcome in none other than Todd Archer from the Dallas Morning News. How are you today, Todd?
All right, guys. How you doing?
Very good, Todd. Well, left tackle seems to be the hole that must be filled with the release of Hotel Flozell and also Ken Hamlin at safety gone. What are some of the names the Cowboys are looking at those two positions, and do you think that's where they're going with the first pick?
You know, the safety thing, I think, is their main priority because they, as much as Alan Ball filled in when Hamlin missed four games last year and did a pretty good job, I think they want to look at that spot and find someone who's more of a full-time player. They're not sure if Ball is a full-time player. At left tackle, they have Doug Free, and they feel confident that he can step in. So I can see a scenario where they, if there's a left tackle and a safety there that they both that they like equally as well, they would go at the safety and maybe try and get a tackle second, third round and see what develops. I'm not sure they're big on Charles Brown or Anthony Davis, two guys that could be there. I don't think they're going to be in play for, obviously, the higher-end tackles that I know they like. So if you're looking at a safety, I know they'd love to get Earl Thomas somehow, some way, but I don't. They'd have to move up, and Jerry's a guy who hardly ever moves up. He always seems to be a guy who's always moving down and trying to get a bunch of picks. But, you know, you're talking about the Nate Allen, Morgan Burnett, and Taylor Mays, and Chad Jones. Those are four guys they had at Valley Ranch in for visits. I don't know where those guys, you know, Mays is looked at as a first-round guy, but, you know, I think Cowboy fans are a little leery of him because they had Roy Williams here for so many years and the coverage skills, and you wonder where he can fit. But position-wise, I think they'd go safety over offensive tackle first, just in terms of who would be there at 27.
Hey, Todd, this is Dan. I was going to ask you a little bit about Taylor Mays, but instead, let me ask you about an offensive lineman. How about Bruce Campbell if he's there? You mentioned those top four guys will probably be off the board. What's the feel there? He's kind of like a Taylor Mays guy, workout warrior,
yeah,
combine stud, but also question marks.
Yeah, and I think that is a big reason why I don't think they would look at him at 27. There are some issues about him. You know, here's a guy who didn't pick up one All-ACC vote last year, and So it makes you wonder, okay, is he just a workout wonder? Does he fit what they want at left tackle? Is he a Hudson Howe kind of guy? You know, Hudson's a guy for years that loves big guys. You know, this guy's an anomaly, I think, as an athlete and what he can do. But there's just questions of was he was a one-year starter. A lot of stuff that, about this guy that you just – I don't know if you want to rest everything on him and say, okay, he's our guy. Honestly, I think if there's an offensive lineman there at 27, the two guys that they I know they like are Mike Iupati and Marquise Pouncey. And now you say, well, they don't need guards, they don't need centers. Well, all their offensive linemen are over 30. Kyle Kozar is entering the last year of his deal at left guard. Iupati's a guy that they've talked about maybe playing some tackle. I don't know if he can make that switch. You guys would probably know better than me. Pouncey's a guy, you know, Gerard is a guy who's over 30, going to be starting to make a lot of money. I know he's made the Pro Bowl last year, but it really wasn't a good season for him. So those two guys, they'd have a good battle over if they were both there at 27. And, again, I don't know if they would be there at 27.
Let me ask you a semi-related question. What do you make of this whole Jerry Jones, Bill Parcells video? And is it being taken at all seriously in Dallas?
I think it's a whole lot of nothing. And you know, some people are, but a lot of people aren't. And, you know, from seeing those guys work together up close for 4 years and while I was here and those guys were here, they get along really well, and they always have. And everybody waited for that blow-up moment where you can say, aha, I told you it wasn't going to work, and it never happened. You know, and I got an email from Bill this morning. So I asked for his reaction. He's like, look, you know, my idea of a friendship is knowing everything about a person and you still like the guy anyway. And that's how he feels about Jerry, and that's how Jerry feels about him. They talk a lot and more than people think. And Bill learned a lot from Jerry, and Jerry learned a lot from Bill. I don't think it's that big of a deal, and wouldn't surprise me if somehow on draft day these guys do business together in terms of moving up, moving down, whatever, you know, as you're looking at trades.
Hey,
what do you guys think? I'm curious. What do you guys think?
I think it's a whole bunch of nothing myself, you know. I mean, it's just a guy who went out for some drinks, had some stuff to say to a couple of guys. I mean, to me, you know, so what? I don't really, it's not a big deal to me. But I wanted to ask you about the wide receiver position. You know, we all know that Roy Williams is turning out to be a monumental bust. Does Kevin Ogletree eventually supplant Roy Williams at some point? I mean, I know that I may be jumping the gun here, but I really liked what I saw out of Ogletree in the preseason, and I think he should, or at least he deserves more of a chance to prove himself. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Ogletree a lot. You know, this team obviously hit on Miles Austin, an undrafted guy. Ogletree, undrafted guy, and then a little bit of inside knowledge because John Garrett was his position coach at Virginia, so he knew a lot about him and the kind of kid he is and how hard he worked and the quarterback situation that he had down at UVA. They like him a lot, but I think for him to overtake Roy this year, it would have to be you got to use a boxing analogy, you got to knock out the champ. He can't win it on points. You know, he would have to come in and just blow Roy away. And, you know, I don't think the Cowboys would be as patient this year with Roy as they were last year. But you're hearing good things about Roy, what he's doing in the offseason conditioning stuff, the things that he's doing at Romo and in their passing sessions. I'm still skeptical because we heard the same things last year. You're going to have to see it in a regular season game, and you're going to have to see it early, and you're going to have to see Romo go to him in tough situations. Clearly last year he didn't. I think Ogletree, though, gets a bunch more playing time this year than he did last year. I don't know if it's completely at the expense of Roy Williams. I think it might be some of it at Patrick Creighton's spot. And I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if the Cowboys come out of this draft with a wide receiver in one of these early rounds, depending on how things shake out. I know they like some guys second and third round that could come in and not have to put the world on them to say, okay, produce, because of what they would have in front of them.
Well, Todd, that actually leads me to my last question here is because I get a ton of emails from the Texas area from people who just are enamored with Jordan Shipley, and a lot of people want to see the Cowboys take Jordan Shipley in the second or third round. Is that just a lot of hogwash from the fans, or is there some legitimacy there?
I think they like him, but, you know, you can only work on history, so you have to look at it. Jerry Jones is drafted now, only one guy from UT, which is amazing when you think about it. And I think it was Wayne McGarity back in whatever year that was. So they don't have a history of taking UT guys, for which is, you know, a pretty funny deal. But Shipley would be a guy that would be able to fill a lot of holes for this team, punt returner, slot receiver, that sort of thing. Again, maybe a younger version of Creighton wouldn't have to come in and set the world on fire, but could help. And, you know, way down the list of what he could do to help is a holder. They don't have a holder. They have no one who can do it on the roster right now if they're not going to Matt McBryer. And, you know, he struggled with it last year, so, and they don't want Romo to do it again, obviously. I don't know how much they like Shipley. I don't know how much they like Shipley, to tell you the truth. I know they like him. I don't know if they love him. I think they're worried about the size. Everybody throws the Wes Welker stuff out there. I don't see that same shiftiness from him. I don't see the same just getting in and out of things the way that Welker does up in New England and did at Texas Tech. It would surprise me if Shipley would be their guy, just because of history and fit in the offense and what they like out of their wideouts.
That is Todd Archer of the Dallas Morning News breaking down the Dallas Cowboys for you, ladies and gentlemen. Todd, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem, guys. Hopefully I didn't screw anything up.
No, good stuff. We'll have to have Todd back on and talk some more Dallas Cowboys football because that was good stuff. We got the draft questions in, and we were able to sneak in some other team questions. And
as always, it's always bigger in Texas, right? So they get an extra long segment.
I got to tell you, I don't know if we can get them on the field. I don't think we'll be able to get them.
Ross, let's hear from you. I want to hear
Listen,
you think it's more than just nothing.
Listen, I don't want to start anything, but the bottom line is this. If NFL players are going to get fined for a, quote, embarrassing the integrity of the league, then when an owner acts like a fool in public and makes the league look silly,
there's a difference.
He must be fined.
No, nobody put a microphone
there's
in.
There's a difference between...
He was on tape.
He was in a bar. So what? He's in public, bro.
There's a difference between committing a crime and saying something that somebody doesn't
want. No, that's right. And it's Ben Roethlisberger didn't commit a crime. No, he didn't.
How do you know?
At the very least, he made some bad decisions.
I'm not comparing
the two things. But when Goodell comes out and makes quotes about the league's integrity being something that he's not going to tolerate being violated, and an owner is publicly drunk and making an idiot of himself, that guy needs to be fined.
All right. Well, you know, that's a conversation for another show. We had Todd on a little extra longer. So
the Cowboys.
What I want to do at number 28, San Diego, we're not going to skip over, but just one word answer, guys. Who do you think San Diego takes at number 28? We'll start with you, Ralph, and go around the room.
Well, I think logically they have to go with Ryan Matthews. You look at the
Ryan Matthews, Ross.
I agree, Ryan Matthews.
Dan?
I got Ryan Matthews in my mock, so I'm sticking with it.
All right, I'm going to be the oddball of the bunch, Jared Odrick. How about that one for the
Saints? Will he be there? I don't think he'll last that long.
Well, nobody else has mentioned him yet on our mock draft scenarios, and we are going on to pick number...
I'm going
to
mention him right now.
29. we're going to break down the New York Jets.
Who's on the line, Rick?
On the hotline, we have the good Reverend draping the cloth fresh out of Midnight Mass.
Hey, Rev, I got to ask you, even though the Jets had the number one defense in the NFL last year, yards and points, they need help on defense. What are you looking for here? Do you want that finally, let's get that outside linebacker then, that can get after the quarterback, the anti-Vernon Golston, or do we grab a guy like Odrick if he's there as a defensive end?
Well, again, when you're picking 28, you have to see who falls to you. You really can't, pinpoint one particular player. If a guy like a Sergio Kindle is there, I would definitely take him at the spot that they're drafting in. I mean, let's face it, the New York Jets, they were a top defense, a top 10 team versus the run, number one overall in terms of giving up points. They only held opponents to under 15 points a game, but they were a little light in the sack department with 32 sacks. 17 teams had more, so I would definitely go with a Sergio Kindle type there if he's available.
Let me ask you this, Red. Do you trust Brodney Poole at free safety and his countless concussions, or are you looking to bolster that?
Well, you know, I mean, look, the thing is that at the 28th spot, you know, the Jets are not going to get a premier safety, in my opinion.
No, later in the draft.
Later in the draft, yes, I would agree with you. Maybe in the third round, maybe even the second round. If a good safety is out there, I would definitely look at a safety, yes.
Okay, and let me just get you to comment on these two players. They had Mount Cody in, and they had Sapp in for a visit.
Yes.
What is your take on those two guys?
I would, if Cody is available and a guy like Sergio Kindle isn't, I would definitely go after a guy like Cody. I mean, let's take a look at, you know, Chris Jenkins, a guy that they invested in a couple of years ago, coming from the Carolina Panthers. He's performed very well when he's been on the field. The problem is he can't stay on the field. He can't stay healthy. A guy who's been injured throughout his career, you can't really count on him. You have a guy like Sione Puha, another big 300-pound guy. He did well last year, but, again, you need more depth over there, and you can't count on Jenkins coming back and performing just like he did a year ago or 2 years ago.
What?
So I would definitely grab a guy like Cody. A lot of people might say, yeah, he's only a two-down guy, but you know what? A two-down guy like that, if you could put offenses in a third and long situation, that just plays into what Rex Ryan wants to do with the pass rush.
All right. There you have it. That's the Jets breakdown at number 29. By the good Reverend Ralph Mancini. We're going to take the New York Jets off the clock. We're going to put the Minnesota Vikings on the clock. And to do that, we are going to welcome in the NFL Draft Bible Super Scout, Kelron Sykes, to the show to break down the Minnesota Vikings draft needs.
Hey, Kelron. Ralph Mancini here. Glad you can join us. You know,
hey, no
when
problem.
People talk about the Minnesota Vikings, a lot of people are mentioning the cornerback position as an area of need. But I take a look at the offensive line, in particular offensive guard position. You know, I saw a guy like Anthony Herrera who got constantly killed week in and week out. And when you're the Minnesota Vikings, you want to protect your most valuable asset, which is Adrian Peterson. So, you know, tell me. Do the Minnesota Vikings perhaps go with a guy like a Vladimir Dukas and move him to guard to help bolster that offensive line of theirs?
Well, Dukas, his stock has risen dramatically within the past month or so, ironically. But I think the first round with that 30th pick, I think Minnesota is probably going to go on the defensive side of the ball, considering the age of Pat Williams there. Golly, he's, what, 37, 38 years of age now, and I think a person like Jared Odrick would be perfect in that system, for that defensive system over there in Minnesota. If not, obviously you have Terrence Cody as well, but they also can go corner at that position too. A guy like Kyle Wilson fit perfect, you know. Antonio Whitfield, he's no spring chicken anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go the route.
Hey, Carol, let me ask you, any chance – that they go for the quarterback of the future in this draft? In particular, could they snag Tim Tebow?
Wow, the Tebow question again.
It's a requirement.
The Tebow question again. Golly, I don't think so. I just don't think a Tebow-style quarterback can fit in Coach Childress's, you know, system there in Minnesota. That's a tough call. And, you know, Tebow's done some great things in college, but I just don't think in that system in Minnesota that it'll work. So I would say no to the Tebow call for right now.
And Kelron, Rick here. We got Kelron Sykes, NFL Draft Bible Super Scout on the phone line. Do you think they're going to keep all their quarterbacks? They got Sage Rosenfels and Tavarius Jackson both on the roster. Are they going to try to dangle one of those guys come draft day? Or do you think they're going to hold on to them both with Brett Favre's status kind of still up in the air, kind of, sort of?
Well, I think with the status of Brett right now, you have to keep both quarterbacks. Golly, if Brett would give these guys a kind of an up and up in terms of what he's going to do, then I think you can kind of deal Sage Rosenfeld for like maybe a third or fourth round pick, would kind of boost her up your special team, so to speak, or boost her up the offensive line play for later on down the road. But once again, that's all held in Mr. Favre's hand right now in terms of, you know, what they do with the remaining quarterbacks.
All right. He is Kelron Sykes of the NFL Draft Bible Super Scout. He'll be joining us next week for our exclusive coverage
of the 2010 NFL Draft, as we'll have reports live from Radio City. Kelron, looking forward to it. We'll be talking to you all next week.
Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, guys, we're winding down to the mock draft scenario. We got 30 in the books, and we're going to move on to number 31, one win shy of holding that Vince Lombardi trophy once again. And to talk about the Indianapolis Colts and the number 31 selection, we're going to welcome on Eddie White from 1070, The Fan, ESPN Radio, Indianapolis. Welcome to the show, Eddie.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey, Eddie, it's Dan. Thanks for coming on. Eddie, I want to ask you, could this be the year, the first time they take a defensive player in the first round since they grabbed Marlon Jackson in 2005? And if so, what direction do you think they would go in?
You know, the amazing thing with the Colts, and we've seen this for so long with Bill Polian, and he's been a master, is no one knows. I mean, if what do you think? There's 1,000 mock drafts out there. I guarantee you every name that's been mentioned in a mock draft, every name, the name that Bill pulls out at 31 will not be a name that was mentioned. He's amazing. One year he picks Reggie Wayne. We're like, what is he doing? We got wide receivers. We got Marvin Harrison. The next year he pulls out Dallas Clark. We're like, what's he doing? We got Marcus Pollard. We're square here. The other year he goes offensive line. We're like, what's he doing? And Tarik Glenn retires soon after the draft. He is absolutely phenomenal. They keep it close to the vest. Last year that no one knew they even spoke to Austin Colley, and he grabs Austin Colley. He's absolutely phenomenal. What we're thinking is, you know, he came out and he was pretty public about it, where he blasted the offensive line after the Super Bowl. None of us really sought criticism, but he did, and he's on record as saying we're redoing the offensive line. They got a new offensive line coach, and he already let go Ryan Lilje, who had started 59 games for the Colts. And I'm thinking he has to go offensive line somewhere. And whoever is the highest-rated offensive lineman on the board, I think. That means he'll probably take Tim Tebow.
I agree with you on the offensive line. I think at some point they're going to have to look at either a guard or a tackle. But what about the other side of the football on defense? What about the linebacker position? You know, I mean, you had a guy like Clint Session who did very well over at the weak side linebacker position. But what about strong side linebacker? Philip Wheeler is not a guy who made a lot of plays last year, quite frankly. Had one sack, one forced fumble. You know, is not the most athletic guy in the world out there. Do you see maybe the Colts, if not in the first round, maybe somewhere down the road, maybe in the mid rounds, maybe in the late rounds, you know, grabbing one or two linebackers in the draft?
You know your stuff, because that's where Bill finds his linebackers. It seems over the years he's let linebackers go. That's why we were partly surprised that they re-signed Gary Brackett, but Gary Brackett means so much to this defensive side of the ball. He's like the Peyton Manning on the defense. He also means so much to the community. He has a foundation. He married a girl from Indiana. He has roots here now. So maybe it's not a shocker that they gave him a lot of money. But Bill seems to let linebackers come and go. It's more the system. And you're right. He'll probably get a linebacker on a third round or fourth round. But I think he's been so critical. He's really stuck his neck out about the offensive line that maybe he goes – who's the center down in Florida? The guy with the crazy first name. You know, I've seen that guy, mock drafts available at 31. I've seen him go earlier than that, you know, in the teens or the early 20s. You know, if he's there at 31, I could see him taking him. I could also see him going for the kid who played down the road at Indiana and Bloomington, Saffold. You know, Indiana doesn't get a lot of press when it comes to college football. But, man, those two kids from the Hoosiers who played for New Orleans were major impact players all season long for Indiana. And, I could see him going with Pouncey or going for maybe Saffold, but I just have a gut feeling we may finally, 10 years it took us, we may have figured him out, and we may be right that he takes an offensive lineman. And then today I'm talking with Don Banks from Sports Illustrated. He says, you know what? He goes, I'm going to have my final mock next Thursday. I think I might have the Colts taking Tebow. I'm like, oh, my God.
Eddie, one more question here. You know, one position that a lot of people don't talk about, and it's very hard to criticize the Colts offense, but, you know, last year the average Colt drive started at the 27-yard line. You know, their kick returners TJ rushing, Chad Simpson. They're not very elusive. They don't make the first man miss. Do you think at some point in the draft they'll look for a guy that could return some kicks? Maybe a guy like Javier Arenas might be, you know, the type of player that fits in to what they're looking for. Do you think that they grab a player with those characteristics?
They have to. The last time they had a returner who was a threat, I think they were playing in Baltimore. I mean, I said all year long, and my partner Kravitz is making fun of me, that, you know, what's wrong with this team? I mean, as they're winning game after game and they're undefeated, I'm like, the thing where they're really bad is they have no kickoff return game. They have no punt return game. They are a threat to nobody. And you're forcing Manning to manage a longer field, like you said, you know, where Brett Favre had Percy Harvin giving him the ball at the 37 or the 35 or the 42. And it hurt them last year. And again, when you got Peyton Manning, you can't complain about too many things. But you're flat out. They had a guy. It was a Clarence Verdan, I think, maybe 15 years ago, was the last guy that made you go, uh-oh, you know, we better not kick to this guy. He may return it. Since then, there's been no threat whatsoever. And I think they'd love to get a burner. They'd love to have somebody like a Percy Harvin. Somebody like that that, you know, could fill in at wide receiver. You know, there's talk that maybe he tries Austin Collie back there. That, you know, I mean, because they know it was a mistake. They know it's been a negative for them. I mean, they got a new special teams coach this past year. And, of course, he didn't do too well in the Super Bowl with the onside kick. But I think definitely the return game is something that they have to address. But Bill is so adamant about redoing this offensive line. It's almost like he's put the blinders on and said, if I'm going to fix one more thing before I get out of here, whether it's after this year or after 2 or 3 years, and he officially turns it over to his son Chris, I think he wants to redo the offensive line.
He is Eddie White of 1070 The Fan, ESPN Radio, Indianapolis, breaking down the Indianapolis Colts. I want to thank you for joining us, Eddie.
You guys are the best. You have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Eddie.
Appreciate that. Steady Eddie, always breaking down the Colts, so make sure you check him out on 1070 The Fan, ESPN Radio in Indianapolis. And finally, gentlemen, we've gotten to the final pick, number 32, the Super Bowl champions, New Orleans Saints, and to put them on the clock with the final pick in the 2010 NFL Draft first round, we're going to welcome on Wes Stivey, Wes, I just butchered your name. I apologize, but you are a big force behind the scenes for the NFL Draft Bible, and you are making your NFL Draft Bible radio debut, so we're going to get right into the New Orleans Saints and what they will do at the number 32 pick.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Wes, what's up? You know, with the New Orleans Saints, they don't have a ton of needs here, but I do see that they do need to revamp their defense in certain positions, and particularly at free safety. First of all, what's the story with Darren Sharper? You know, he's a free agent right now. Do they bring him back in? And if they don't, maybe, you know, do they take a guy like Malcolm Jenkins and make him their starting free safety? You know, when I take a look at Jenkins, I think he's more of a safety than he is a cornerback. You know, give us your thoughts on that.
Well, I definitely think they're considering Jenkins at safety. There are a lot of questions about his speed and athleticism to cover on the outside. But I do think that they'd like to look at a safety in this draft, and I think Taylor Mays is the guy they could be looking at there. There are a lot of questions about whether or not Sharper will be coming back. I think that if they don't get a safety high in the draft, he will be back. But if they are able to add a guy like Mays or Nate Allen possibly from USF, he may not be back.
Wes, let me ask you, I mean, they have some other needs there, especially up front on defense. What are some of the names you're hearing there for defensive end and defensive tackle for the Saints? Because I think those are both needs.
Oh, yeah, they're definitely looking to upgrade the defensive line. They just signed Alex Brown to help play defensive end. He'll probably be sharing time with Bobby McCray. They have Will Smith at the other end. He's very good. So I don't think they'll be looking at a defensive end in the first round, but defensive tackle is definitely a possibility. Jared Odrick could possibly be there. I doubt it, but he's probably something they're hoping will fall. They may go ahead and take a guy like Brian Price, even though a lot of people are projecting him in the second right now. And even a sleeper pick, Linval Joseph from East Carolina. He's a guy who's been rising a lot lately with his athleticism and size.
Yeah, and also, since we talked about defense already, I don't want to bring up the linebacker position. I want to ask you about the running back slash fullback position. You know, Mike Bell is gone. He was very productive, you know, whenever he took the ball. But right now, you know, you have Heath Evans who's coming back as a fullback. He's coming off a knee injury. He's getting up there in years. A guy like Pierre Thomas, a very good player, but, you know, he's not the most durable guy in the world, and neither is Reggie Bush. Do you see them bringing in either a running back or a fullback at some point during this draft? And is there any particular player or players that you're looking at to help shore up that running game?
Well, I think that they could be looking to add a running back, but I don't know how early they'll be looking there. Like you said, Pierre Thomas is a very good player, and Reggie Bush is also there in the passing game, and he's definitely a big play threat. But they lost Mike Bell to the Eagles, and I think they could be looking to add a power guy, like the goal line back. Jonathan Dwyer is a possibility from Georgia Tech. He's the definition of a power guy. He's big. He has some athleticism. He didn't have the best combine, and it's possible he'll be there in the late second to mid-third if they wanted to look his way.
That's Wes Stivey. And, Wes, you know, I don't know. Your first appearance on the show here, I'm chopping up, butchering your name, but Wes Stivey from the NFL Draft Bible, one of our production coordinators who works behind the scenes tremendously behind the scenes, doing all kinds of good stuff, bringing you the NFL Draft Bible publication. Wes, thanks for all your help. Thanks for coming on, and we'll do this again next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
I think Wes has actually passed me as the most butchered name on it.
Magallan. Well, you are. And you are joined by Daniel Magallan and Ross Mandel. Ralph Mancini, Rick Saratella here on the NFL Draft Bible Football Friday Spectacular Part 2. Part 3 will be coming up Wednesday, folks. We're moving the Part 3 extravaganza to Wednesday. We're going to do NFL Draft Eve, another 3 hours with me, the RIC, in the place to be right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we will be airing on Fantasy Sports Channel 10-plus hours of pre- and post-draft coverage from Radio City, yours truly, delivering the inside scoop. I'll be out there on the red carpet with all the draft prospects, bringing you the interviews. And tomorrow, Sunday, we have a very special show. Kareem Jackson will be joining us from the national champion Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll also have Corey Wooten on up north here from the UConn, defensive end. Northwestern, I'm sorry, I got him confused with the other kid. Witten.
He's originally from Jersey, though.
So who are we having on, then? We're having on Wooten.
Corey Wooten.
We're having on Wooten, not Witten.
East Rutherford.
Okay, so Corey Wooten and Kareem Jackson on Sunday. Tomorrow, if you're around, ESPN New York, Jody McDonald, Jody Mack, I'll be on at 1:25 tomorrow. And then check out the NFL Draft Bible for nonstop radio appearances, because that's just how we do it. I want to give a very special shout-out to all our chat room people. Glad to see a lot of familiar faces in there. You can go to blogtalkradio.com or fsc.fm, get into the live chat room. And then, you know, we have all kinds of good stuff coming up, more announcements coming next week, Twitter feeds, live draft coverage, all that good stuff, NFLDraftBible.com. If you didn't reserve your copy of the 321-page NFL Draft Bible, let me tell you something, because you are missing out. Do not get that sale product. Do not go to the bookstore and buy stuff that's been on the shelves. And do not hit the switchboard when I tell you not to, and hit the switchboard, okay, because we're going to break it down, NFL Draft Bible. Get your copy now, 321 pages, to order the PDF, download on demand. We break it down for you hardcore. We're going to take a couple minutes of break here. We're going to come back. We're going to close down the show. We have Arthur Jones coming up at 9:20, the Syracuse defensive tackle. He's going to talk to us. We got Benjamin Klein, the NFL Draft Bible Talent Evaluator, coming up at 9:35. And always, talking small school talent, that will be Josh Cannon of JB Scouting, talking some small school prospects coming up on the NFL Draft Bible, Football Friday Spectacular Part 2, baby. I'm your host, Rick Saratella, Ralph Mancini, Ross Sandell, Daniel Mogul-Young. We're going to come back, close down the next
more live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on. Attention fantasy football players. Are you sick and tired of struggling year after year in your fantasy football league? Well, my friend, those days are over. FantasyFootball.com has all the tools you'll need to dominate your competition from August to December. Customized cheat sheet, draft predictor software, live advice, average draft position and auction value tool, and our 150-page draft guide. We have it all. Visit FantasyFootball.com today and sign up for our Platinum Package. It's the best value on the net. If you're serious about winning, we're the name of the industry. FantasyFootball.com.
Tired of just getting by in your fantasy football league? Want to trump your friends in fantasy baseball? Then check out OwnersEdge.com, the website that provides its readers with everything a player needs to dominate their league. Our daily player rankings, extensive injury reports, and analysis on individual defensive players can help you become a winner. So why play against the competition when you can destroy it? And to top it off, OwnersEdge.com has added live advice, the latest and the greatest tool in fantasy sports. This add-on allows you, the customer, to contact our award-winning staff and ask every question you possibly can have about your fantasy team. If you're not sure which players to start or which should ride the bench, why not ask an expert on the spot? So instead of scraping together hints and tips, go to the source. Join us today at OwnersEdge.com.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
So, you think the football season's over?
Nothing is over until we decide it is.
Yes, again, there is no off-season. I'm Andrew Garda of the Thundering Blurb Football Show, and I'm here to tell you that every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific on Blog Talk Radio's Fantasy Sports Channel, the Thundering Blurb Football Show will have you covered from the start of free agency to the combine to the NFL draft. Every Wednesday, I'll bring you the interviews from tons of prospects firsthand and straight to you from training facilities and pro days. Know who you need to draft before anyone else. Listen to the Thundering Blurb Football Show every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific on Blog Talk Radio's Fantasy Sports Channel.
Looking for that inside edge in your fantasy baseball leagues this year? Well, look no further. The Fantasy Phenoms Baseball Hour is your inside source every night of the week. Jason Sarney and Brett Greenfield talk sabermetrics, draft strategy, and much more in an hour full of fantasy advice and baseball information with frequent guests like Tony Cincotta, Red Oldham, and Lenny Melnick. You'll never know what will happen. 6 to 7 Eastern Time every weeknight on the Fantasy Sports Channel and available on iTunes. The Fantasy Phenoms Baseball Hour. All that you need to dominate your league. Be there.
What's up, everybody? I'm Dave Mandonka.
And I'm Audley Stevenson.
Now, if you're looking for a basketball talk show with civilized conversation...
This isn't a buffet. I want more.
Yeah, go call your mama.
Dave, come on, man. You can't forget the big laugh.
You guys are hilarious already, man.
And big guest...
Darvin Ham.
Hi, this is Spud Webb.
Hi, I'm Tracy Murray.
The NBA Breakdown is the place for you. Catch us Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/the NBA Breakdown for Hoops Talk, the way it should be.
Break it down.
Welcome back to the big show, the NFL Draft Bible Football Friday Spectacular Part 2. Breaking it down, Rick Saratella, Ralph Mancini, Ross Mandell, and Daniel Mogul-Young here. Closing you out for the next 45 minutes, taking you to the top of the hour, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you know how we do it here. in New York City, guys. We've had a jam-packed show. Let me just reset and recap it for you. So far, in case you're just joining us, you can go back and check out the archive. We've had Jarius Bird from the Buffalo Bills. We've had Jonathan Dwyer from Georgia Tech. Ken Dorsey, the former University of Miami quarterback. We had beat writers from across the land covering mock draft scenarios. And we have Arthur Jones coming up in about 5 minutes or so. But before we do, guys, the one intriguing mystery about the new draft format is how it's going to all unfold and play out. A lot of people anticipating more trades, three-day format, a lot of veterans on the chopping block. Who are some of the guys that you're looking at, Reverend, that could move on draft week?
Well, I'm going to start off with a couple of running backs. I'm going to start off with Marion Barber III from the Dallas Cowboys and Mr. Marshawn Lynch from the Buffalo Bills. Look, if you're a team like the San Diego Chargers that desperately needs a running back, I mean, why not look at a guy like Marshawn Lynch? If you have other needs and you want to take that defensive lineman in the first round, why not trade for a guy like Marshawn Lynch, who, you know, he's only 23 years old, has got elite skills, already has a 1,000-yard season under his belt. I think he does need a change of scenery. If you bring him in, I think he will be motivated. I think he will produce. He does have a plethora of skills. Another guy, Marion Barber III, you know, he might be a little bit harder to trade because the Dallas Cowboys did give him a $4 million roster bonus, so they're going to want a lot in return. But if you can get a guy like that for a fourth-round pick, I think he's a guy that could be sort of that hammer, maybe that even the New Orleans Saints might be looking for to replace Mike Bell.
Ross, who are you looking at here on draft week, some of the veterans that could be on the move here?
Well, I'm interested to see a couple of things, and that is backup quarterbacks, maybe like a guy like Jason Campbell. He could even go to Buffalo and compete.
Backup?
Well, he's going to be a backup if
you
he
think?
Goes anywhere but Buffalo. No?
Right.
Maybe
right.
The Raiders?
Yeah.
Well, right now he is. Right now he's certainly a backup. Guy like we mentioned before, you know, Sage Rosenfels could fetch a decent draft pick if they want to assume, as I am, that Favre's coming back. But I think to me the interesting thing is that with the different days of the draft now, there's going to be more time for teams to sit back, assess what they've done, assess what they need, assess what other teams need, and maybe work out a trade. They're not only going to have a couple of minutes to make a decision. They're going to have an overnight period, and I think there's going to be a lot more activity as a result of that.
Yeah, I agree, Ross. I think that's going to be – we're going to see that a lot. I mean, there was a great story this fall. I think it was in the Times about the Jets trading up for Sean Green, and they were talking about how because the third round was another day, all the coaches had time to really lobby the GMs. So I think that those first five or six picks in the second round really increase in value, especially in a draft this year that there's so much depth. I think there's going to be 5 to 10 players for almost every team that they have on their top 15 or their top 20 that are going to be available in the second round. And there's going to be scouts and assistant coaches lobbying GMs, I think, across the NFL. We got to trade up and get this guy. I think there's going to be a lot of that. So I would not be surprised to see a lot of action in the top of the second round.
Well, what I think is interesting is, like, you know, here's a guy, for example, Lendale White is on the trade block.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you could probably have Charles Scott in the fourth or fifth round. So to me, Lendale White doesn't even draw much trade value. I think some of these veterans, teams are expecting to get value back, but there really isn't any. Marshawn Lynch doesn't really have any true trade value out there. And I think there's a lot of guys like that where teams are expecting to get something back, and I don't think that there's really much of a market out there for a guy like a Ronnie Brown who's coming off significant injury. I mean, these are name brand value guys, but if you look at the recent years, I mean, there's a lot of name brand value guys that get pushed right out of this league and just go see Edgerrin James, Sean Alexander, and Torrey Holt this year.
I mean, look at what veterans are fetching on the market now.
Right. It all depends on what you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for a fifth or sixth round pick for Marion Barber, for Marshawn Lynch, I think you can get that. But if you're looking for a second or third round pick, then you're just dreaming.
Yeah, I think guys like that are going to stay where they are because the team's going to go, well, you know, rather than get a nickel for a dollar, we can just hold on to Lynch in case we need him. I mean, and Wendell White especially, you know, he signed his tender today, I think. And, you know, $1.8 million, That's a lot of money, but it's not that much money. But they're not going to get more than a sixth round pick for him.
I know, but if you're a team like the Seattle Seahawks, wouldn't you want to take a gamble on him? Pete Carroll is there, his former coach. He knows what type of player.
So how many U.S.
don't
play?
You already have enough.
You already got the big Mike Williams. Is he going to get the big Lundell as well?
There's a difference between Mike Williams and Lundell White. Lundell White is actually producing
the NFL. About 5 pounds?
About 25 years. I mean, come on, man. Lundell's got no treadmill.
I'm just saying, if all I have to give up to get Lundell White as a fifth-round pick, I'm taking him if I'm a team like the Seattle Seahawks.
I think that the Titans would be ecstatic if they could get a fourth or fifth round pick.
All right, here's a name I'm going to throw out there that comes via the chat room, Albert Haynesworth. The Redskins just paid a $21 million bonus, so his contract now is really only looking like $18 million over the next 3 years. Is there any chance, any possibility that there's a fit that works where Albert Haynesworth could be on the move?
How about the Chiefs or the Rams?
Well, what I'm hearing is as the Tennessee Titans might want him back.
And what is it going to take, though, to get a deal done? I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what are you giving up to get an Albert Haynesworth?
I'm thinking a second or third round pick, third round being the lowest.
So if they only get a third round pick, they would have him for 1 year and paid him how much?
For like $100 million. Now,
but then again, you're talking about an injury-prone guy, a guy that doesn't want to be with Washington, who's not a good fit for the 3-4 system.
Well, that's
so you might be better off just trading him and just, you know, trying to get whatever you can for him.
And that's where the real problem resides, because when he was a free agent last year, he actually went to his agent and told them to scratch off all the teams that play 3-4 defense off his list. He didn't want to go to any of those teams.
Well, guess what? You know,
his
wish
may come true.
Now what's he going
to
do?
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to watch. We mentioned Tony Scheffler, another guy being mentioned now to the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll see if he gets dealt.
That makes too much sense, so there's no way it's going to happen.
Well, you know, I mean, it would open up the Bengals to do something else, especially in that first round.
That's exactly right. That's why you make a deal like that. I think that's a great deal for both teams. I'd like to see.
Well, you know,
if you don't get Scheffler, I really like this kid Dennis Pita in the third round.
Absolutely.
I think he
would
be
a Giants player.
I love Dennis Pita. What about a guy like Leon Washington? You think at this point he stays with the Jets?
Yeah, I don't think anybody
stays with the Jets.
Nobody wants a running back coming off a serious leg injury, and I just don't see that happening. You know, there's a couple guys. You know, Ted Ginn moved today.
Don't the Jets kind of need Leon Washington too?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
So don't trade a guy you need, especially if you get half the value for him.
But you're only going to keep him for another year, though.
Hey, a year is all you guys need, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All
right, guys. I want to go. We have a little round table going on. I want to throw out a topic here. You know, I've been making the rounds on the interviews, and people always ask me, you know, who's a player to keep a lookout for and X, Y, Z. I want to ask you, who's one player that is not being mentioned in the first round now that you think will ultimately turn out to be one of the top 30 or 32 players in the draft? And I'm going to tell you who my guy is, somebody who I really believe that the Patriots are targeting in the second round with one of their 3 second-round selections, a guy that, you know, might just light up the chat room and get a fire started because – there's so much love out there for this guy in the Fantasy Sports Channel chat rooms. And I'm talking about none other than the weapon, the human weapon himself. That's Dexter McCluster.
Yeah.
Okay? When it's all said and done, I don't care what his size is. I don't care that he doesn't have an exact position. What I do care is that this kid's a football player. And just like I said when Darren Sproles was coming out, he's the real deal. He's actually an enhanced Darren Sproles, in my opinion, and he will be one of the top 30 players to make an impact
in
the 2010 draft.
How many touches does he get when he's established himself as an NFL player?
15.
15 a game.
He gets Percy Harvin.
Okay.
That's what he gets.
15 to 20 touches, and he'll do more with those 15 touches than – the main running back will do with 20. He'll be Felix Jones, you know, in the type of running back where, you know, he'll get his 10, 15 touches and do more damage than say Marion Barber will do with 20.
How about a guy like Eric Decker?
Yeah.
Well, not in the first round.
No. Well, that's what he's not going in the first round.
Okay.
This
nope.
is what we're saying.
No, we're talking about possible first round picks.
No, we're talking about guys who are not going in
okay.
the first round.
Okay.
I like me some Eric Decker. I obviously the Giants don't have a huge need at wide receiver, but I think if he goes to the right place, he could turn out to be a massively productive receiver.
Well, you know, if we're talking about wide receivers, I'm going to go with a guy like Brandon LaFell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's a guy who I think has all the skills to be a premier receiver. He's got the size. He's got the agility. He's got the hands to do it. He made a lot of tough catches. He produced, despite having subpar quarterback play throughout his collegiate career. You know, I think if you get a guy like this in the second or third round, I think he has all the skills you're looking for to develop into a number two or even possibly number one receiver down the road.
I'll tell you where he would be a perfect fit, maybe at the top of round two, Cleveland, in that West Coast style of offense. Allow
right.
him to, you know, because he's a slasher. I mean, he does his damage after the catch.
Yes.
So, you know, you put him in that West Coast style of offense, those little slants and dashes, and let
mm-hmm.
him, you know, get him on those 8-yard slants and let him run with the ball.
I know what the Rev really likes about Brandon LaFell is he blocks. He's one of those few wide receivers that likes to mix it up and get in there and block in the running game.
Yeah. Let me ask you about a guy that I like. I'm not sure where he's going to go. I want to get your feelings. I'm Montario Hardesty. Where's he going?
I think he's probably going to be a second-round guy.
You think that high?
Yeah, I think so. He's one of the guys that really helped himself the most, I think, not only as a senior, but throughout this whole process. I mean, I think he really wowed people at the combine. He was as impressive as any running back was there. So he's got very good size, and I think he's a lot faster and more athletic than people anticipated.
So he could pass the wire.
He could.
He could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Very
well. And I'll tell you why.
You won't say it when JD's on the air.
Let me tell you, because, you know, one thing I always pay attention to in covering the draft, you know, all these years is draft trends. And a draft trend that I've noticed that I've tended to see is that, you know, Montario Hardesty was the number one rated running back by Bledsoe and National before the season started. And teams remember that. And I noticed that, you know, if you're ranked number one by National or Bledsoe and your draft grade does fall off and your draft stock does fall, you still have that preseason ranking that teams have banked in the memory bank. And, you know, that's why I think that's a big reason why Montario Hardesty is going to go in the second round, because teams are going to be looking at him like, you know what, people thought he was the best running back entering the season.
And he built on
and
that.
He has that potential and the capability. So, you know, and he may be, you know, the best running back.
Well, I think the only thing standing in his way are the knee injuries that he's already suffered throughout his collegiate career. Let me throw out another guy to all three of you guys, a guy that doesn't have those injury concerns, and that's Ben Tate out of Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about a guy with the size, and he also proved in this past year as a collegiate player for Auburn that he does have the burst to make plays on the outside. He can be a big play type of running back, and he's a guy who can pick up the blitz and be a
mm-hmm.
good blocker as well. What do you think about him as being a possible second or third round guy who eventually could be a number one running back down the road?
Yeah,
and I think he's right in that range. I mean, he's somebody that came in really highly touted out of high school, maybe didn't fit in necessarily with that, you know, with the spread offense. He's not really that kind of back. He's more of a traditional running back, so I don't think he fit in well when they tried that. I mean, nobody on that open roster fit in with that offense, but I think this year with a more traditional offense, we saw Tate really flourish and go on. And like Hardesty, I think surprised people. He was a lot faster and more athletic.
4.43.
Yeah, than people expected. Nobody was counting him. So he ran faster than a lot of guys, you know, that really surprised people in Indy.
Is Tate the third best tailback?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You said he can run, block, and catch. Those three attributes make you an every down back at the next level.
Well, let me throw this question out there, guys. We always talk about positions where there's a run, and because, you know, guys go early and then all of a sudden you see a lot of guys go after that. Could the reverse almost happen in running back because there's so many guys that are – we've talked about Dwyer, we talked about Hardesty, we talked about Tate that are so closely bunched. Could that almost hurt them because teams could say, hey, I don't need to grab this guy because I can maybe – you know, there's so many other guys in the mix there.
I think people are misreading the running back class because I think there's going to be three running backs in the first round minimum.
Minimum.
And I'm going to say C.J. Spiller is going to go in the top 10. I like Ryan Matthews in the middle to Houston. I think San Diego could potentially take a running back. And I think Javid Best sneaks into the end of the first round as well. And you know what?
Do you think that's a fit though in San Diego? They already have.
No, I'm not saying.
I'm hearing that Detroit.
I'm not saying Javid Best would go to San Diego.
Okay.
I'm saying San Diego is in the market for a running back. In addition, I think Javid Best will get drafted in the first round. I really do. I think teams have Javid Best on the same skill level as the C.J. Spiller.
Wait a second. You know, you take a look at a team like the Minnesota Vikings. You know, they're talking about maybe even signing a Brian Westbrook. Instead of going for a broken-down Brian Westbrook, why not go for a young Javid Best that you could pair up with, Adrian Peterson in the backfield out there? You know, I think that would make some sense, too.
Well, guys, you know, let me throw out another running back from Mississippi State. Anthony Dixon, Dan, a guy that we both like his running style, but much like the Giants running back from last year, you know, injury problems. Who was the Giants guy?
Andre Brown.
This is Andre Dixon. I kind of have them in the same mold. What do you say there?
Well, he's a big physical back. You know, he might not have the upside of a Tate or a Hardesty, but I think he could definitely be part of a tandem. So if you do have, let's say, like a San Diego, if you already got a Sproles, he's not a bad guy to grab maybe in the third round where he could give you that between the tackles runner.
Well, if you miss out on all those guys, what about Mr. Toby Gerhardt?
The Revs guy.
Touchdown
Tommy reincarnated.
I love Toby Gerhardt. You know, a lot of people seem to compare him to Mike Allstott. I think he could be a little bit better than him.
Well,
hey, why not?
Touchdown Tommy Vardell.
You're saying someone's better than Allstott?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who showed enough flexibility, showed enough vision to make big plays in the running game.
Well, let me ask you this.
A tremendous athlete who played baseball as well. So
before we welcome on Benjamin Klein, NFL Draft Talent Evaluator, let me throw out LeGarrette Blount. What round, let me go around the room, what round does LeGarrette Blount go in?
I want to say end of the third round.
I don't disagree with that. I was going to say early in the fourth round.
I'll go fifth round. I think there's a lot of guys there that are close skill level wise that don't have the question marks he does.
Yeah,
and let's not forget, he only played 1 year at the college level and wasn't even a full-time starter that 1 year. Mm-hmm. So he still has a lot left to prove even as a player.
He does. I'd take him in the fourth round, though.
Yeah, I think fourth round is a safe selection there. And then one more that people are throwing out in the chat room, Aaron Hernandez. Here's a guy I've seen all over the board. I've seen him in the middle or end of the first round. I've also seen him as low as the third round. Where do you see an Aaron Hernandez going, anyone?
I think more in the second round range. I could see him going mid to late second round.
Yeah.
I think he's a playmaker type. He's not a traditional
tight
end. I'm
telling you, the Patriots are going to get him with one of those.
I'm also going to say,
UConn boy, Connecticut kid?
I'm also going to say mid to second round, but if you miss out on Aaron Hernandez, why not go for a guy like Ed Dixon, who I love also from Oregon?
A different kind of player, though. Hernandez is a real playmaker. I mean, they get him the ball in handoffs on shovel passes at Florida. So they are somebody that they use. Well, let's get the ball in this kid's hand.
I think Belichick,
let's make things happen.
I think Belichick wants that kind of guy on his offense now for Brady.
So you don't think Dixon's could be a factor with his skills in the NFL?
No, I think Dixon's a solid prospect as well. But I think if you're looking for a pure weapon in the passing game, I'd go more Hernandez. Dixon probably has a better chance to be more of a traditional tight end on the line of scrimmage if that's what you're looking for. So I think a lot of that depends on what kind of offense you're running, what kind of skill set you're looking for.
Okay.
All right. One more around the room, around the table. Give me one wide receiver not going in the first two rounds that should be on our listeners' radar. I'll start first. I'll give you one. Everybody knows I've been pumping up Taylor Price. Everybody knows the cat's out of the hat, Mitchell. I'm going to go to UConn, Marcus Easley, former walk-on kid, who I think is going to go probably somewhere in that third or fourth round range. And you know what? He may go even lower just because NFL teams have a stigma of drafting walk-on players that high. Believe it or not, there is a stigma that exists, and NFL teams are reluctant to draft walk-on players.
I'll give you a guy who's been all over the place. I've seen him creeping up and then creeping back down, and no one knows what to make of Mike Williams.
Mm.
Well, I was also going to go with the kid from UConn, but I'll give you another guy that sort of caught my eye during the Senior Bowl, and that's Jeremy Williams out of Tulane. He's a big kid. He can run routes. He's a tough guy. He can make plays after the catch. A very, very, very skilled route runner. I think Jeremy Williams could be a factor down the road.
Dan, what do you think of my man Freddie Barnes?
Well, not so fast, Freddie Barnes.
Yeah. Come on, Dan.
He's probably going in the seventh round in that range. If he gets drafted. I mean, I think if we're going for a guy not in the first two rounds, I like the guy you brought up before, Eric Decker, my boy out of Minnesota. 6'3", almost 220 pounds.
You don't think he can sneak into two?
I don't know. I think more likely in the third round. Could he sneak into two? Sure he could. But I think he's hurt a little bit by the fact that he hasn't been able to show anything throughout this process.
Hey, guys, what about Jordan Shipley? I mean, here's a guy.
I'm not sold on Shipley going in the second round.
I think he could be an instant contributor at the NFL level.
I think Shipley could slip, guys. I really do.
How about a Donald Jones from Youngstown State? At least
that.
How about Emmanuel Sanders?
There you go. I like that one.
Size there. I don't know.
Return
more
game.
Of a slot guy.
Yeah.
Return game.
Great athlete. All
right, guys. Let's.
I hear the bell chime.
Let's move on to our next guest, and he would be none other than one of the young emerging talents in the NFL draft talent evaluation game, and that would be Benjamin Klein. Welcome to the hotline.
How's it going, everybody?
We're doing good, Ben, and for those that may not know, you can catch Benjamin's work on the NFLDraftBible.com. Like I said, one of the emerging talents who's going to start hitting you with the 2011 draft next week. I'm not joking.
And I can't wait, baby.
I am not playing, ladies and gentlemen. The NFL Draft Bible does not stop. We are a machine, and we will be breaking down the 2011 draft scouting reports, player profiles all next week. We're going to be introducing you to the 2011 NFL draft prospects that you need to know. So it doesn't stop, can't stop, won't stop. You know how we do it here on the NFL Draft Bible. But Ben, first we must discuss the 2010 NFL Draft. And you have an angle that has not really yet been talked about too much, a very interesting scenario that you and I discussed off the air. Why don't you fill in our listening audience to what you think could be going down?
Absolutely. Reading the tea leaves, I think the Rams and the Browns are primed to make a trade with one another for the first and the seventh, exchanging more or less Bradford going from the Rams to the Browns.
So you're saying that we could see an identical scenario as a couple years ago where the Giants and Chargers pulled the switcheroo with the Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers situation. And there has been a report that the Rams do like Jimmy Clausen. What's your take here, Ross? Do you think that the Browns and Rams could do a flip-flop scenario here?
Well, I mean, obviously they could if they wanted to. Clausen will last that long, and that's the only factor weighing in on that. But, I mean, do the Rams honestly think that Clausen is a better quarterback than Bradford? They must. Unless they're getting a heap load in return for swapping spots, what do you hear they're getting back there, Ben? I mean, what's going to be the compensation for allowing them to move up to one?
Well, let me just make this clear. I haven't necessarily heard anything. I'm just looking at the situation. If I had to guess, if I had to look at it since it's from 7-1 instead of from 4-1 like it was in 2004, I would say this year's first-round pick, next year's first-round pick, and two of the Browns' three third-round picks this year. I would say number 85 and number 92. Now, this would give the Rams five picks this year in the top 100. Actually, six picks with 99, which would be the fourth round. But they would have 7, 33, 65, 85, and 92. And they would have next year's first-round pick from the Browns. And just like the Giants, they ended up giving up an 11th overall pick that ended up being Sean Merriman. So that could be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, Ben, but after that day is over, will the Rams have a quarterback? It's NFL ready. I mean, are you that high on Clausen as they are?
I think that what's going to happen I'm not positive, but I would imagine that the trade would be predicated upon, it wouldn't be executed before the draft, it would happen the day of the draft, like the Eli Manning trade, where they would sit back and wait to see if Clausen actually fell to the Browns at 7, and then the trade would be executed, just like the Chargers sat back and waited for Rivers.
That was, is he actually going to be a functional quarterback for the Rams?
In the West Coast offense that they run, I think that they could play Feely for the first four games, and then they could give the reins over to Clausen for the last 12, and then just ride the wave and hope that he shows in progress.
Well, Ben, I know that a lot of people are touting Clausen as being the most NFL-ready quarterback out there. But what about if that scenario does fall through? What about if the Rams just maybe take a gamble on a guy like Mike Vick, as it's been rumored for the past few months, and maybe bring him in as a starter for at least 1 year to sort of, you know, prepare, you know, Clausen and let him sit back and learn things from the bench holding the clipboard for a while?
Can't make that trade. And then
I think if that trade was going to happen, it would have happened already. I think he makes too much money, and the Rams don't want to pay him $5
million.
I don't think he's that good anymore.
Well, Ben, what about Jason Campbell? I mean, here's a guy that could be had for, what, $3 million a year?
That would actually be a good caretaker for Clausen. I could see that possibly happening for like a fifth rounder or a fourth rounder, so long as the Redskins weren't asking for too much. But again, one of the reasons why I think that the Rams are inclined to deal this pick is because they've pretty much established that Bradford is the guy that they're targeting, but they haven't entered into contract negotiations. They've even gone so far to say as they won't do any contract negotiations before the draft. Now, if they really wanted Bradford, they would bring in the Ndamukong Suh for a visit and say that they were entering into contract negotiations with him to drive down Bradford's price. But they're not doing that. They're just sitting back and waiting. And I think the reasons why they're not entering into negotiations is because they're still hoping that the Browns come through and wow them for that pick. That's why they're not entering into negotiations. They're still keeping their options open.
Am I the only person that thinks taking Ndamukong Suh might be the right move for the Rams?
No, I'm with you on that one. I just don't think they're going to do it.
Everybody thinks that, but they passed up Sanchez. They passed up Matt Ryan. The team is in dire need of a quarterback.
They even drafted Jay Cutler and traded him to the Broncos. It just gets worse when you actually go back further.
I mean, I think, though, that could be one of the worst reasons for taking a quarterback. I agree.
If I was the Rams, I would sit back, take Sue, and then wait next year for Andrew Luck or Ryan Mallett or Jake Locker and get one of those three guys and be thrilled.
I'd have no problem with that.
Well, I think Ben makes some solid points that every year you see the number one team bring in all the, you know, they have their hit list.
Yeah.
You know, we're interested in these X guys, two or three guys. And, you know, we're going to bring them in. We've started the negotiation process with so-and-so. And, you know, a couple years ago, what was it, Long and whoever, and they went on with that. Last year, same thing. And, Ben, you make some solid points. The Rams are not doing any of this. They're just kind of sitting back. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, and they've even pretty much identified that Bradford is their guy. They've said we've targeted him as the number one guy. There's no competition for him, but we're not going to negotiate with them. So if they are really going to keep him, they're just costing themselves more money in the long run. That's bad business. I don't see how that makes any sense.
No, it definitely doesn't make sense.
It might not make sense, but it's going to make $50 million, I'll tell you that.
That's why they're the St. Louis Rams, and that's why they're in the number one pick, because, you know, they have to remove their head from another part of their body. Okay, so let me ask you this, Ben. Moving right along, let's get off that number one pick here. Before you came on the air, we were talking about some potential players who may or may not go in the first round. Give me, you know, a couple players that you're looking at that will not be taken in round one, but will ultimately be one of the top 30 players in this year's draft when it's all said and done.
First, I love the middle linebacker out of Washington, Donald Butler. Is that his name right? I always space on. Sorry.
Yes, sir.
I love him. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. I think he might actually end up being in the long run better than Rolando McClain. He's fast. He's a three-down linebacker. He's strong. Another player I like is Aaron Hernandez. I think as a, almost a poor man's Dustin Keller, he could be good for 750 yards and seven touchdowns in a pass-happy offense. Who knows how to use him as a slot guy, as a screen guy, and don't ask him to, you know, inline block too often. And
I know you're high. I know you're high on Colt McCoy, Ben. You were driving that bandwagon a couple weeks ago. Are you still high on him?
Yes, I am. And I'm actually still kind of feeling that someone – I didn't mention him because I think that it's a distinct possibility that someone's going to come up in the late 20s. And, you know, I don't think he's worth a first-round pick. I think he's still a second-round pick. But I think that just like Josh Freeman last year, someone will trade up and take him too high to make sure that they get him and no one else does. So I could see him going in, like, the 26 to 32 range.
So, Ben, you're telling me that, you know, after Clawson and after Bradford, you see McCoy as being the quarterback who has the most upside out of anybody else at that position?
Absolutely. And, I mean, and this is how ridiculous – I mean, I think this is one of the weakest quarterback drafts I've ever seen. I mean, it's not as bad as the Brady Quinn, Jamarcus Russell year. It's not that bad. But it's bad enough that if I was in need of a quarterback, I'd still probably sit back and wait till next year. But if I had to pick one of these guys – I'd probably pick Colt McCoy.
So you have no reservations about his size, about his arm strength, about the way that he just folded against, you know, some big teams like Nebraska. You have no reservations about that?
I would have reservations with how short he was. I mean, he's 6'1", so he's not teeny tiny, but he's tiny. But I would have reservations about that if he was flat-footed, if he was lead-footed. But he's quick-footed. He can get outside the pocket. He can create throwing lanes within the pocket like a Drew Brees. He can manipulate different throwing motions. He can throw over the top. He can throw slightly submarine. So he can create angles with his throwing motions, which is good. I like that. And he can drive the ball down the field a little bit more than people give him credit for. And he's just a winner, you know. You know, I love the fact that he plays in front of 100,000 ravenous people with massive expectations in gigantic games all the time. He played 2 years under center, 2 years at shotgun, and he was equally effective in both.
And
you know,
he'll stay in the pocket.
Yeah, he'll stay in the pocket and he'll man up. I mean, he definitely needs, I mean, as the game against Nebraska proved, he needs to get that internal clock in his head a little bit more accelerated. He needs to get the ball out quicker. He needs to think about that quicker. But I think that with pro coaching, I think that he will really accelerate. I could see him turning into a poor man's Drew Brees almost.
Hey, Ben, it's Rick again, and we're talking to Benjamin Klein, the NFL Draft Bible Talent Evaluator here on the NFL Draft Bible Hotline. One quarterback who I believe is moving on up numerous draft boards is Jonathan Crompton from Tennessee. You know, he was a combine snub, but, you know, I've spoken to people who do believe he could very well be the number two quarterback in this draft class. Where do you tend to stand on Mr. Crompton?
I think that he's been undervalued as well. I think that while some people have been hyping up players like Jevon Snead, that Crompton's going to end up going ahead of him. And it's, you know, some people are going to say, oh, I'm totally shocked by this. But people who actually pay attention really won't be. Crompton's kind of reminds me of a kid out of Clemson, Charlie Whitehurst, not in terms of how they play, but in the fact that neither of them were super duper productive during their college careers, but they were good. But they in the systems that they played and what they showed, I think that within a few years, like Whitehurst, he could get a shot to start, and he might be able to run with it really well. So I can see why you would like Crompton a lot.
And then the last two guys I want to throw out there to you, Ben, since we're talking quarterbacks, Dan LeSever and Tony Pike. Where do you stand on these two guys?
I like them both, but I don't like them, you know what I'm saying? Like, I hate to badmouth them, but at the same time, I wouldn't take either one of them. Pike is brittle, and I question his arm strength. And even though he's tall, I see him falling apart at a nasty hit really bad, you know? Even though he's put on some weight and he's shown some great dedication. And LeFever is just too scatterarmed. I just see him spray too many ugly balls, you know? Last thing you want to do is end up with a new Kellen Clemens, a guy who just throws ducks left and right.
All right, that's Benjamin Klein. Before we let you go, Ben, We mentioned you're working on the 2011 draft class, which we're going to start leaking. Yeah, we're going to start leaking that onto the site next week. Who are some of the guys that you're looking at right now, and who are some of the names we should keep our ears open for?
Two groups that have so far just ridiculously impressed me, and that's three wide receivers, Julio Jones, Michael Floyd, and A.J. Green, and then three quarterbacks, Andrew Luck, Ryan Mallett, and Jake Locker. And I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility that if these guys' seasons turn out the way that I think they will, that those six guys, two different positions with three apiece, will all end up in the top 10 of next year's first round.
All right, well, you heard it here first in 2010. That's Benjamin Klein breaking it down for 2011 and beyond. So, Benjamin, I want to thank you for joining us, and you will be on with us again next week for our 10-plus continuous hours of NFL draft pre- and post-draft coverage next week here on the NFL Draft Bible. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Can't wait. Have a good day, guys.
Take it easy, Ben. All right, keeping it moving like we always do about this time right here on the NFL Draft Bible.
Three more hours.
We just extended the show. I'm just kidding, folks. Calm down. To close out the show, we always bring in the heavy hitter, and that would be none other than Josh Buchanan from JBScouting.com. And Josh Buchanan covers the small school prospects like no other, and you can get his NFL Draft Small School Draft Guide on JBScouting.com. Go to JBScouting.com, get your PDF copy of the JB Scouting Small School Draft Guide. How are you tonight, Josh?
Doing good. How are you, Rick?
Doing well, and we're going to go around the room. Last week you were on and talked about some offensive players. This week we're going to cover some defensive small school prospects. And the first guy I want to throw out there to you is a guy that I really like and is skyrocketing up draft boards. That's Sean Lissamore.
Yeah, Lissamore is a heck of an athlete. He's strong as an ox. He's one of those guys that, you know, he'll probably play 10 years in the NFL. I think he may go anywhere from rounds 5 through 7. Been hearing a lot of good stuff on him as of late, especially after the pro day where he put up freakish workout numbers, to be honest. So.
Hey, Josh, talk to us about a big, long-limbed guy from Murray State, Austin Lane. What's your take on him?
You know, I like Austin a lot. He's very raw and he's a lot of work, but he's got the athletic ability, the range, to be a very good pass rusher in the NFL. An interesting thing which may surprise some people, a lot of teams are looking at him as a 3-4 outside linebacker. I said linebacker, to stand up, even though he's 6'6", 274, because he's that athletic and fluid, which is very impressive for a man that size.
He put on a lot of weight in college. Does he still have room to put on some more?
He could probably put on another 10 or 15 just because he's so long and so broad. You know, he's got the frame and the build. I mean, he was 260 in college. He could be 280, 285 easily. Yeah, maybe even 290. I don't know if he'd run. I don't know if that'd be the best interest for him in terms of speed, because you're going to sacrifice a lot of speed. But, yeah, he, in terms of a build, he could easily be 285 or 290.
You see him as a top 50 potential guy, or a little later than that?
I think he's going to go a little later than that. I really do, just because of the fact he's so raw. He's a fourth or fifth round caliber player right now, but he could be a starter in this league at some point. I think he'll probably be a third round or early fourth round pick.
Hey, Josh, it's Dan. Long time no speak. Let me ask you about another guy who could transition to the outside linebacker, and that's Arthur Motes, who's got a tremendous amount of speed coming off the edge. What's your take on his potential at the next level and where he could end up going in the draft?
Dan, you know, I really like him. A highly productive guy. He's explosive. He makes a lot of plays in the backfield. He's disruptive. He's very quick off the edge. I think he's going to be an outside linebacker. He runs handhelds, 4.5s, electronics, run the 4.6s at the combine. But he's a very fast, explosive player that showed he could play linebacker in the Texas game. And I really believe, you know, he maybe comes off late third, early fourth. I'm projecting in the fourth or fifth round just because of the, you know, his lack of height's killing him. I mean, there are some teams that if he was 6'4", he'd be going in the second round, no doubt, right now. So it's going to be real interesting to see where he lands, just because, you know, he's very undersized, but he's such a good player. I don't see him falling past, you know, the early, no worse than the early part of the sixth round.
Talking to Josh Buchanan, the small school insider from jbscouting.com. On sale now, the small school report draft guide. Go to jbscouting.com to get that. Josh, we got a question coming in from the chat room in regards to the Northern Iowa hybrid, James Ruffin. What's your take on him?
Ruffin was a player I had a lot of expectations for coming into this year. I didn't think this was one of his best years, but he's a guy that when you doubt him a little bit, he tends to prove you wrong. He's got all the talent, but he really needs to get in the weight room, work hard, shed some of that 40 time. I mean, you never run it again, but needs to get a little faster and play with a better motor. If he had the motor of Danny Batten, I think he's a third or fourth round prospect. But right now he's probably looking sixth, seventh round or priority free agent, just, you know, because like I said, he did have a bit of a down season, and I actually gave him a priority free agent grade. So but he's a guy to look for, because when you start to doubt him, he's known to step it up and turn it up a notch on you.
Yeah, Josh, speaking about guys with a big motor, what about Danny Batten out of South Dakota State?
Yeah, I know. Batten is probably my favorite defensive player to watch, just because he's a coach's dream. I know of one team, and I won't divulge who they are because they'll be very mad, but they refuse to give a grade on him to anybody because they want him that bad. I mean, there's a chance this particular team I'm thinking about is an AFC team might go for him in the fourth or early fifth round. Their linebackers coach really wants him as an outside linebacker or a DN type of guy, like a hybrid. So, their D-line coach and their linebacker coach. So, he's probably my favorite to watch, just because he's got the ideal motor. He's relentless, and he makes plays all over the field.
They must have seen that game tape against Minnesota.
I think everybody did. It was funny. Every scout I talked to after that game thought a little differently of them than before. So, yeah, that's one of the games that everybody's fallen in love with.
Hey, Josh, I can't believe we talked about so many guys and nobody's asked you about probably the best small school defender, and that's Akwasi Owusu-Ansah. Maybe everybody else is afraid to try to pronounce that name. I don't know what it was.
Harder than yours.
But where, you know, how does he stack up as a prospect? I mean, for people that have never seen him play, how does he compare to somebody like a DRC who was a first-round pick a couple years ago out of the small school?
Got a better build than DRC. He's thicker. He's stronger than DRC. But he's not, and he's got the speed, but he's not quite as polished. I've given Ansah a fourth-round grade, projecting him to come off the board, though, because of the upside in the second or third, whereas DRC was a second-round value to me coming out, first-round projection because of the upside. You knew he'd be a Pro Bowler at some point. So I think in terms of cover skills, he needs a little more work, but he brings such great value in the return game that, I could see somebody, even though he had the shoulder injury, you know, he has worked out for scouts, and he's coming along faster than expected. He will be ready for mini camp, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him come off in the second round.
That's Josh Buchanan, founder of jbscouting.com. Josh, quickly tell everybody where they can get your draft guide.
Yeah, you can go to jbscouting.com. There's a link on the front page where you click on it, and it'll take you to a place to buy it. I kept telling everybody, I thought it was going to be 60 or 70 pages. It ended up being over 190 pages. So those who pre-ordered it got it for $4.99. Now it's $8, but you can go there and purchase it, and then you'll actually get a link to download it. It's a pretty big file, but it's in a WinZip file, and once you purchase it, you'll get the link, and you can download it and have it within a matter of a couple minutes. So, that's the best way to do it right there.
And there you have it. He's Josh Buchanan. I'm Rick Serratella for the NFL Draft Bible Familia, Ross Mandel, Ralph Mancini, Daniel Moluglione. It's that time. 3 hours down the drains, folks. We're going to be back again on Sunday with Kareem Jackson, Corey Wooten. But until that time, you know what time it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome to the big show.
A couple of tackles. Headlock, I don't go. He's gone.